This is PFW in Progress. PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Oh. Fudge.
Only I didn't say fudge.
Paul Perillo.
Fragile. That must be Italian.
I think that says fragile.
Oh, yeah.
And Andy. And Andy?
Andy, don't play with your food. Eat it.
Andy Hart.
Andy, show me how the piggies eat.
Eat it, boy. Show mommy how the piggies eat.
Some guy named Tom.
He looks like a deranged Easter bunny. He looks like a pink nightmare.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
Holy smokes, only one thing in the world could have dragged me away from the soft glow of electric sex gleaming in the window.
PFW in Progress.
Oh, and the Mr. Red Undercarbon, I shoot you in a jet with my lead rifle.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Well, Tom, try as they might on Sunday, the Patriots couldn't shoot their own eye out. But we all right there?
I'm on.
Okay.
They tried.
PFW in Progress on a Tuesday afternoon after one of the more subpar victory performances, I would say, by the New England Patriots in recent years. 28-21 over the lowly, pathetic Detroit Lions. And Bill Belichick told us all week how dangerous the Lions could be and how talented they could be. And no one listened, myself included. I picked 45-3 New England. Just missed on that prediction. And wouldn't you know, you're in a fourth quarter of a game, you're trailing by 8 points, and you had all you could do to come back and win.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. I mean, they didn't do a lot of things well. They didn't run the ball well. They didn't defend the pass well. I mean, I know they got some interceptions and sacks there, especially in the fourth quarter, but I'll continue to say there's guys wide open against this team, especially in the middle of the field. Just receivers wide open, and a lot of times right. The Patriots are playing quarterbacks that don't hit those receivers consistently.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that Bill talked about with Kitna and with the Mike Martz offense and a lot of deep in cuts, and that's what we saw. We saw a lot of guys crossing the middle, like you said, Tom, that were uncovered, and it never really changed throughout the day. And that is one concern that I've had. It seems when the Patriots don't get a lot of pressure on the passer, the opposition is able to move the ball. Now, fortunately for the Patriots, number one, they get timely pressure, and number two, they've been able to get really tough and force a lot of field goals mm-hmm. once they get close. And that was the difference in the game, was a combination of sacks and red zone. Because if not for those two factors, I think the Patriots may have had too big a hole to climb out of. And then even as it was, had Rod Marinelli decided to really go for the victory and gone for that fourth down and gotten it, we may have been looking at a different game as well.
Yeah, I know we discussed that at the time, and you were much more adamant than I was about him going for it. But now that I was thinking about it, you know, I was thinking, you know, you're 2-9, and it's not just the record, but to instill in your football team, you know, that we're gonna be aggressive. We're gonna take. I think now
we're gonna do what it takes to win.
Right, and I know I'm thinking back now because the Lions lost the game, but. Thinking that you're 2-9, you know, because he said to me when I asked him, he said, well, if it was a little closer, we would have thought about it. How much closer do you want
it
to be?
It was a chain win.
Yeah. So with that kind of response, that kind of swayed me a little bit. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and, you know, I hear a lot of people say, and this is not to pick at you, Tom, so don't get defensive on me and, you know, get all roid ragey over there. But I hear a lot of people talk about they're 2-9. So they have, you know, what do they have to lose and, as if the record should have something to do with it. I don't really even look at it that way. I look at it as the Patriots are 9-3, and they've gone for it on fourth down more than anybody in football. Bill Parcells has constantly been the head coach of football, successful football teams. He has a reputation for going for it on fourth down more than anybody else. I think it's a mentality. I think it's I'm going to do what it takes to win the game, and I have confidence. Do you get them all? No, of course not. No one's going to get them all, but if you don't try to get them, at least some of the time, then you're not going to be in a position to put games away. I think that the best way to clinch a game is on offense, not having to rely on your defense to stop them. It's my same mentality that I take late in games when the clock is winding down and people say, well, I'll just run it three times and punt and let your defense do it. No. Throw the ball, get a first down, and then kneel on the ball. That's the best way to victory.
Yeah, and the two things you said I agree with is the mentality. Detroit's been a losing organization for many, many years now. And the Patriots have not. The Patriots have confidence because they've been successful. They can come back. You know, they have confidence in themselves. The mentality of a team that always loses, like Detroit, if you get that first down, if you get that touchdown, maybe that changes things for the rest of the year. Maybe you ride that emotion. And the other thing you said about the depending on your defense, their defense sucks. You know what I mean? You have to know what your team is. Let's be honest. He's depending on his defense? Come on.
Well, that's the open here of PFW in progress on Tuesday at Gillette Stadium. Patriots obviously get the victory to move to 9-3, much more difficult than any of us imagined heading into the game. You can give us your thoughts, and it's good. We have a lot of emails already lining up. Webradio@patriots.com. Once again, webradio@patriots.com if you want to join in with Tom and I. I believe Andy Hart may be making a cameo appearance later on, so you might want to get your email in before he gets here so he doesn't just shoot you down the way he can bully readers and listeners.
I don't know,
the way
Paul.
He does.
I mean, is he going to be able to get an SPFW done? It's a seven-hour process.
It's between that and performing the brain surgery that he has scheduled at 1 o'clock, so I don't know if he's going to be able to get it done in time. Maybe they'll go to Bed Bath & Beyond a little later. We'll have to check on that one. But webradio@patriots.com.
We're going to go to Home Depot, maybe Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know. I don't know if we'll have enough time.
And also you can give us a call at 508-543-7482. And Andy Hart, shows his ignorance.
That he's not
exactly
doing SPFW.
And he, he uses foul language as well. And, must be really busy doing that SPFW. Anyway, the first email, and I want to read this, even though we don't normally get right into the emails. I thought I wanted to share this one with Tom.
Well, went in as a hot dog and came out as orange fire water.
Oh, great. That's helpful.
This came in late night, late afternoon, virtually right after the game was over, 4:39 p.m., right after the game. And this message is for Tom. I am a huge Pats fan out of Florida. I was listening to Friday's edition of PFW. Tom can now shut his mouth, saying Corey Dillon makes him puke. He proved to Patriots Nation that he is still the number one guy. I love Lawrence Maroney, but he still needs a mention for at least. He still needs a mentor for at least one more year. Tom needs to take his self-centered POS. What's that? Anyone? POS?
I don't know.
Self-centered POS and have respect for the guys who have helped us get to the Super Bowl. Robert Kraft, spelled with a C, by the way.
Yeah, good job.
Needs to remove this jackass from the program and bring in someone who knows something about football.
I'm not going anywhere.
Tom, as for Chad Jackson, he is a rookie. Douchebag. He is a rookie. Give him time. He will come around and be the number one for next season. Go, Pats.
How do you know that?
Screw you, Tom.
How do you know that? How do you know he's going to come around?
So Corey Dillon...
He had a whopping 40 yards, 2.8 yards per carry. So, in other words, you're saying that when Zach Crockett scored 12 touchdowns for the Raiders, you were talking about how great he was? Is that what you're telling me? Corey Dillon stinks. I've said it here. I've said it on Felger's show. I don't care if he comes in that locker room and gives me a stupid stare. I don't care. I'm not scared of him. I think he's a waste of time, and I don't think he should be on the field. If he wants to rumble in from 1 yard in and spike the ball, great. Other than that, he's wasting my time. There's my response.
That's Tom Casale. This is PFW in progress. Doesn't it get any plainer or simpler
Paul,
than that?
How great has the running game been lately?
I think the running game has been racking up
70 yards per game.
The running game has been a going concern. We've been talking about it a little bit. But I can't really recall. Do we go back to Cincinnati?
I think there was one game after that.
Green Bay wasn't bad. Now, everything wasn't bad in that game
because
they dominated so badly. I can't really recall too many times since that Cincinnati game. And we talked about it at the time with the Bengals. We were all looking at it like, geez, they have an opportunity to have 2,000-yard backs.
Yeah.
If these guys stay on this pace, and it was only a month into the season, but they were really showing a balanced offense. Lately, though, it's been really subpar. And I think it started really to go. The one that opened my eyes was the second half of the Colts game, the one that everybody said they needed to run more, and no one focused on how they didn't run effectively.
Right.
When they did run it in the second half, I don't think it's been the same since.
Well, let me ask you, Paul. What did Corey Dillon do on Sunday that should make me shut up?
He ran well on the goal line, that's it.
Yeah, and he always does that. When's the last time I said, boy, he doesn't run well inside the 5-yard line? I've never said that. They only ran the ball 24 times. Maroney went out early. Where was Dillon? There was a huge 3rd-and-1. Who was in the game?
Patrick Pass.
So Dillon is so great that on 3rd-and-1, you have Patrick Pass in the game? Well, that's nice to know. You can rely on him.
I mean, it hasn't been good. The running game hasn't been anywhere near as effective as it was earlier in the season and not as effective as we all thought it was going to be. And I would fall into that category. I thought they had a chance to really have that be the strength of the offense. But right now, it's the same old story, if you ask me. It rises and falls on the shoulder of Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a good thing because he's great. And more often than not, you're going to rise when you use that as your barometer. But if he has a bad game, you can't win.
Right.
Because you don't have any other manner with which to win, in my opinion.
Right. I agree. And you know what I can't wait for next year, Paul? When it's Chad Jackson really didn't play last year. So this is really kind of like his rookie season. And that's what it's going to be next year, those kind of cries. Hey, listen, the guy can't get on the field. When he does, he doesn't make plays. I'm sorry. There's a lot of other rookies out there who have stepped in and provided help for their offense. This team has no receivers. None. They have one. Rashay Caldwell, and they have Ben Watson, who's a tight end. Chad Jackson should be getting in the game and contributing, and he's not doing that. If you don't think that's a problem, you're blind. Because we're not being biased. We're just telling it like it is.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I think that there are some things to be excited about, some things that have improved, most notably Rashay Caldwell.
Yep.
Has really emerged as, I think, a legitimate top wide receiver right now for the Patriots. I think that's encouraging. I think Ben Watson is an enigma because he is showing that he can be that weapon in the passing game as a receiver, but yet he is just not being able to hold on to the football. He's fumbling too often. Receivers can't fumble the amount of times that Ben Watson has fumbled this year. I mean, a running back doesn't fumble as often as Watson has, and there's really no excuse for it.
Other than Kevin Fall.
Well, that's true. That's true. But don't take shots at Kevin.
You said running back, and that popped into my head.
Well,
but and I think, Paul, what you said about Rashay Caldwell is, too, if we all think the Patriots thought they would come to some kind of agreement with Deion Branch the whole time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Rashay Caldwell would have been the number two. Now, if he had developed like this with Branch on the other side, boy, then you would have really had something going. But unfortunately, the Branch thing spun out of control, and they weren't able to re-sign him.
Because now you have to wonder, do they have that second guy? Like, let's just say a month from now, if you're going into games, and I think you touched on this a little bit in your matchups after the game against Detroit. So let's say you're going into a playoff game with, you know, a good defense, theoretically, that you're playing, and they say, well, we're going to do something to take away Caldwell. We're going to do something to take away Watson a little bit, and we're going to make him beat us with other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the other guys that can beat you?
Right.
Because I'm not sure that there is one. Certainly hasn't been anybody consistent.
Other than running into the goalpost, Doug Gabriel hasn't done anything for like three
weeks. By the way, one of the funniest moments of the season.
My instant reply was, don't show the replay.
One of the funniest things that seriously has happened this season.
You know what Gabriel's problem might be? Doesn't he seem like a happy-go-lucky kind of guy? Like he just kind of like wanders around the locker room with a smile on his face. And it seems to me those kind of guys don't fit in well around here.
Well, I think you're right. And look, he hasn't done it consistently. Chad Jackson obviously hasn't done it consistently. Who am I missing? Troy Brown has just been asked, to do too much.
Troy Brown.
He's been very consistent, but I think, you know, maybe this, and we'll get to the news that maybe some of our listeners may or may not know, maybe the signing of Ray Mickens might allow him to be, you know, more of a full-time receiver, which would be good. I just touched on it. Patriots placed Eugene Wilson on injury reserve yesterday and signed veteran cornerback Ray Mickens. Mickens is a guy who did work out here during the season. He was with the Jets in training camp, was let go just before the start of the season. Patriots brought him in for a tryout, I want to say in late September, sometime around there. Guy that has some, he played in Cleveland last year, Tom, so he has some familiarity with the system, obviously being in Cleveland, being with the Jets, played under Belichick, so he knows the defense a little bit. 34 years old, so he's been around. He's a guy I think that can help out as an extra defensive back.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Mickens fan.
No, but
only
I mean, he's,
he
is
reminds
what it is.
Me of he reminds me of McMillan, who used to play for the Eagles. Remember him?
The little guy, yeah. Eric McMillan.
And that's the problem. He's so freaking small that you can get those mismatches on him with the bigger receivers. That's the problem. And there's nothing he can do about that. That's just, you know, God-given size. There's you can't get taller.
Well, Tyrone Poole used to say that was God's way of making it an even playing field because he gave him so much talent. I'm not kidding. He said that God blessed him with so much talent that if he had size as well, it wouldn't have been fair.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But the defense, I mean, that's a concern too now. The defensive backfield, we're still waiting on Rodney Harrison. You know, I think they need him there because, well, I think anyone will agree that he's not the player he was a couple of years ago after he's been injured and stuff. But at least with Harrison on the field, receivers know he's there. They know that he's lurking, and at some point they could take a whooping.
Yeah.
And right when he's not in the game last year and this year, it just seems like receivers run freely through the middle of the field without any care in the world. And I think getting him back will be a big help to the defense, obviously.
Yeah, and I think that's a big issue right now because when you have as many guys running across the field, and even when they're getting tackled, they're not getting really hit. I mean, like Roy Williams had a 21-yard catch over the middle the other day, and I think it was Chad Scott just got him by the ankles, just holding on for dear life. You know, it's not like they're making these plays, but they're paying for it,
mm-hmm.
You know, which would be one thing. Saying, well, you know, sooner or later, they're going to wear down. They're going to not want to make those catches. I'm watching a lot of highlights over your shoulder as you were talking earlier, and I was watching highlights of the Indianapolis-Tennessee game, and they must have shown five passes that Manning threw that were perfect to his receivers over the middle, and every one of them, a Titan was right there to crunch the guy.
Yeah, I saw those.
One of them ended up being a catch, a couple of them ended up being drops, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in a game.
And Dallas did the same thing to the Colts. They hit them, and they hit, you know, every time that. And I'm wondering if the Patriots have the personnel to do that.
Yeah, I mean, receivers by nature are smaller guys. They're not really built to withstand that kind of pounding. Not everybody is an Anquan Boldin,
right?
You know, and can just go over the middle, Larry Fitzgerald, and take those hits. So a lot of them tend to be, you know, scat water bug kind of guys. You know, 5'9", 5'10".
And let's get back to Chad Jackson for a second.
He's a guy you would think would be able to take
this
that.
This guy's huge. I mean, you should see this guy in the locker room. He's a machine. And I think that's why we're disappointed is the fact that he's never on the field. It's always something. You know what I mean? Did you ever have one of those things where you know someone's telling a lie because there's a bunch of coincidences?
Yeah.
Like, boy, 10 things must have happened for this to be true. I just feel like there's always something with him. At first it's the hamstring, then it's the groin, then it's this, then it's that. Then he's out there and he's not doing anything. And I know it's his rookie year. I know other big-time receivers have had bad rookie seasons. And maybe next year he comes out, catches 50 passes, and puts us all to rest. I'm just worried because he can't get on the field. And you know our famous phrase, you can't help the club from the tub. So he's got to get out there and start contributing.
Oh, wow, I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, if you're not able to get on the field, you're not able to help. And this groin thing to me, I've been kind of patient, I feel, you know, especially for my standards. I call guys bust in their rookie training camp, you know. So I feel like I've been somewhat patient here. But this groin thing, I mean, I just wonder how many things are going to happen and when it's going to end. Who knows? Maybe he just puts it all together next year. Maybe he's somehow finds a way to be a contributor late this year. The way the Patriots generally do things, I wouldn't be surprised to see him catch a bomb for a touchdown in a playoff game.
Right.
You know, that's just generally the way it happens with them.
But something we've been touching on upstairs, you Andy and I, he was supposed to have Bethel Johnson speed. You know, he came into the combine running Bethel Johnson kind of numbers. And when the pads are on, from what I've seen, he doesn't have Bethel Johnson speed.
Yeah.
He doesn't create that separation. He doesn't have that gear. When Bethel Johnson has that gear, when he hit it, it was good night. You know, it was kind of like the guy for Florida, Harvin, when he went up the middle there and he just went whoosh. That's Bethel Johnson speed. I don't really see that from Chad Jackson. I think he's a fast guy, but he's not 4.32 fast with football pads on.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but we'll have to see how we have to try to figure out how much the injuries are affecting that.
Maybe he is injured. Maybe next year he comes in healthy, he's got the system down, and boom, he explodes.
And hamstrings are major things for wide receivers. We talked about that during the summer. Maybe he just feels like he can't get that gear that he's looking for because he's not confident in it. You know, who knows? There's got to be certain reasons, you know, for everything. We'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He is a rookie. We will hope that he's able to put it together, but so far the initial signs are not good ones because, you know, you need to be out there. You need to be on the field and at least practicing.
Yeah.
And he hasn't even practiced consistently all year, in my opinion.
And that's one of those things that builds to next year. You know, even if you're playing as a rookie and you're not doing much, but just being there, practicing, being with the team, getting on the field, doing some things, he's missing out on that, and that's what helps you get better in that second year. So he's kind of behind the eight ball for that already.
All right. Well, let me get to another email here. We have a lot of emails, but I'm trying to get some of the ones that came in, you know, right after the game, and I want to talk, you know, specifically about the game a little bit, too. But
first, though, a tough day for Fred Kirsch. Greg Schiano staying at Rutgers.
Yeah, I saw that.
So we'll have to test Fred's theory.
Yeah, it might be one of those good news, bad news things for us, because if he had left, at least we could just always hang our hat on, well, he left, you know.
Now if they stink next year, we'll never hear the end of it.
Exactly. This is Chris. He's in Bangkok, Thailand, one of Andy's favorites. The Pats game was not on TV this weekend. Evidently, wasn't being shown in Greater Bangkok.
Well, with the announcers they had for it, I guess it wasn't one of their prime games.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what happened. But beating the Lions by 7 must not be easy. Can you please discuss about the running game? Are we running enough? Because the winter is here, and it does not seem that we can run the ball in the last two games. Lions, 54 yards by running backs and only 39 by Dillon and Maroney. Bears, 73 yards by running backs. Should we be worried that the running game is being marginalized by Coach Belichick, or is it good because the running backs are going to be fresh from not being overworked? I don't think work had anything to do with Sunday. What do you feel, Tom?
No, I'm not necessarily...
We talked about this, obviously, a little bit already.
I'm not necessarily worried about how many times they run it, but it's more I like to see them get yards when they run it. You know what I mean? If you're running the football and it's not working, Belichick's not going to keep beating his head up against the wall. You know what I mean? If you can just throw the ball for 350 yards and you're not being able to run it, he doesn't care about being balanced. He cares about scoring points. And I'm more concerned that when they do run it, it hasn't been effective. And I think it'll be a good test this week because one of the teams that really shut them down was the Dolphins the first time they played them, with the linebackers filling the holes. So if Maroney's able to go this week, we're not quite sure about his injury yet. This will be a good test for him because this is the kind of, even though the Dolphins aren't going to the playoffs, they have that kind of athletic defense that you'll see in the playoffs. They, you know, they get to the ball quickly.
They've played well. They've played well on that side of the ball most games.
So it'll be a good test for him this week.
Riche Caldwell is really looking good. Can you please check the length of his contract that we still have him? Because that is exactly how long he will be playing for us. He has a question there. In other words, he'll be gone if his contract is up. I'm actually not sure on that. Was it two?
I thought it was two. They signed him to a two-year deal. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I can't remember. And
I know it wasn't like a huge
deal. No, it wasn't a big money deal. It wasn't a huge deal, but I can't remember the length of it. I think Tom might be right. 2 years sounds right, but we'll try to look at that and maybe get an update for you, Chris, later in the show. Maybe Andy Hart can break himself away from AskPFW. I know that's like, you know,
if
he can step out of the operating room just for a moment.
He's probably not at his desk right now, so.
Right. The management is spoiled by Brady's unbelievable talents that he does not even need a good receiver to throw to. Can you just imagine if Brady had a high-priced talent receiver, how much better we would be? I was bashing Brady at the beginning of the year for not playing well. Currently, he has been great. 69 for 102 for 818 yards, 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. What do you think? I think he is back. He seems to throw like the old Brady. If the receivers are open is another issue, and that's Chris in Thailand. Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about that with the receivers. I think that Caldwell has made the step up.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get to a couple more of these before we switch gears. This is Nick. He wrote last week to fire Tom. Wait a minute. Up about. I wrote last week to fire Tom up about, but he missed what I was saying. I was agreeing with you that Roy Williams sucks.
Oh, okay.
I was just giving Andy some cover, saying it's hard to scout rookie safeties. When do Wilson and Harrison come back? Well, obviously Wilson won't be coming back, and Harrison's still iffy. What happened to Maroney? How serious is it? What about Vrabel? Both head injuries. Vrabel was in the locker room after the game talking about it, but he did say that he didn't remember anything about the play. Didn't remember anything until he got into the locker room. Maroney was nowhere to be found. So I would, from that only, I'm guessing that Maroney is more serious, but we'll have to wait and see.
That goes to the first email we got, Paul. If the young guy can't go for the next week or so, then you guys are going to get your wish. You're going to have big Corey Dillon there for the whole game. So we'll see how that turns out for you.
I've always liked Asante, but can't the opposing quarterbacks throw picks to Hobbs or Scott? Every time he picks off the ball, I want him to stay more. The chances of him staying decrease a little more. Attention, Patriots Nation. Gostkowski has made 11 of his last 12. Stop picking on him. Adam missed 8 his rookie year. Give him a break. He's getting better. With a loss for Indy in Baltimore, the Pats have a small chance at a bye again. I think Indy will lose at least one more game, but I could see as many as 2 more at Jacksonville and Cincinnati. If Baltimore and Indy ended with the same record, what's the tiebreaker, division record and then the AFC? Well, they're not in the same division, so it would go to conference head-to-head if they played, and I don't think they did. And then it would go conference record to answer that question. And Indy would have to lose 2 games, not 1, for the Patriots to get, even assuming the Patriots won out.
Right.
With T-Rex's whopping 34 yards passing and 3 interceptions, isn't it time to switch to Greasy? This one's for Tom, but I'd like to hear everyone's take. What do you think about Florida jumping Michigan for the right to play for the national championship? That's Nick in South Dakota.
Well, I think you can just listen to Kirk Herbstreit, and it's my exact same opinion. If they had voted...
No, I'm sorry. It's San Diego. I think I made that mistake before. San Diego with Nick. My bad.
Oh, okay.
Nick is in San Diego, and I said South Dakota before because he just writes SD.
Oh, I probably said that too. I agree exactly what Kirk Herbstreit said. He said... If this was voted 2 weeks ago, they would have voted Michigan. It's what you've seen last. They saw all the coaches, and Herbstreit makes a great point. They asked these coaches to vote on teams they've never seen. He said Urban Meyer just said, I've only seen Ohio State play once, yet they're the best team in the country. He said, how does he know? He just told you he only saw them play one time. So what happened was all these coaches were home this weekend watching Florida play. They had that in their heads. That was the last team they saw, and they voted them in. I figured that was going to happen, and, you know, what do you do? I can't complain. 12-1 SEC.
Let me ask you this, though. I've heard a lot of that. Now, you know what I feel. I don't think Florida's that good. I think Florida's one of those teams that just kind of squeaked by. But I've heard a lot of people talk about this in terms of with 2 weeks ago, Michigan would have been – I don't have any problem with that. I think that's probably right. But things happen in 2 weeks. Florida's resume improved in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I guess. I mean...
Nothing happened. Like everybody said, what happened to Michigan? Like I read a lot of national columns said, what happened to Michigan in the last 2 weeks? Did they have bad practice? No. Florida went out and put up a couple of impressive wins.
No, but Herbstreit was saying if they played those 2 games on the same day, like if... If Michigan
that's
lost
a different
all,
argument.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a different argument.
If Michigan and Ohio State played this week, the same time Florida and Arkansas played, when the coaches were all sitting home watching them, then I think Michigan would have got the vote. But Herbstreit's point is, it's hard to ask coaches to vote because they're too busy taking care of their own team. They don't know how good Michigan and Florida and all those teams are. They basically, you know, a lot of that goes to the Heisman too. You know, if Brady Quinn has a huge game against USC and pulls off the upset, a lot of coaches are home watching that game.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's a closer race.
I do think there's something to be said for that. When you're talking about when only one team is playing and everybody gets to watch them and whatnot. But I don't necessarily fall into the category of well, what happened in 2 weeks? Did Michigan have a bad week of practice or something? I'm like, well, no. I mean, Florida went out and beat Arkansas and looked pretty good.
Florida's
probably had one of their
then.
Probably had one of their better games, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the best game I've seen them play, I think.
Because they probably, and believe me, no one was rooting against Florida more than I was. Okay? I don't like Urban Meyer. I hate that rinky-dink offense that he runs. I think he's doing Chris Leak a disservice. Tom and I talk about this on a weekly basis. But I actually think that game was should not have been anywhere near as close as it was. A couple of kind of fluky things happened that allowed Arkansas to be that close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that they gave up 28 points was more a result of kind of fluky things rather than, you know, Florida not playing well. I think that that was one of their more impressive performances. And if that's the case, I think you can legitimately make an argument like, well, I didn't really think Florida would look that good against Arkansas. I think a little bit more of them today than I did 2 weeks ago. You know, I think that's – no one's really looking at it that way. Everybody's looking at it, what did Michigan do? Well, Michigan didn't do anything. Their resume is just as strong as it was the day that they lost to Ohio State. And I think there's something to the fact that Florida was a conference champ, Michigan came in second, and Michigan had their chance against Ohio State.
Yeah, I don't think people wanted to see the rematch. And I can live with that. I'd rather see a different game. You know, Florida's earned the right to, you know, as much as I don't like them, they've won 12 games in the SEC.
The hardest conference in the league, I mean, in the country.
And one of the things the computers will look at, which I should point out, is that Florida's loss to Auburn wasn't as bad as the final score indicates
because
of the final play. And Michigan's loss to Ohio State
wasn't as close
because they scored. So if you take a look at it that way, the computers actually – that actually helps Michigan in the computers.
Not that Florida-Auburn game, not only that the loss wasn't as bad as it looked, Florida probably should have won that game. I mean, with the block punt, I mean, did Auburn even get any points on it? They didn't score any touchdowns.
They had the leak throw that was the fumble.
Right, and that was the right call, by the way. But, I mean, let's face it, Florida probably should have won that game. They were the better team.
Right.
And, again, no one's happier that they lost than I was because I just don't like them. But, you know, that's our little jump into the BCS. The bottom line here is something needs to happen with the system. I think that, what's this, how many, 9 years? And now they've had major controversy in five of them. You're not going to get too many years like last year where you have consensus 1 and 2. No one else can make an argument. You have USC and Texas, and no one else has an argument.
Listen, there's 872 bowl games. You can still keep most of them. You keep them all. You know what I mean? You have an 18 playoff that turns this into the greatest sport ever because you're taking what I think is the best sport, college football, and then you're adding a little bit of the NCAA tournament, which I think is the best time in sports, to the football. It's perfect. I don't understand, but it's not. I agree with Corso. He'll be dead. when they have a playoff system, he won't be here to see it.
And you talk about, you know, you're depriving the student athletes of the bowl week. You know that
goes
into it.
You can still keep the Louisiana Bowl, the New Mexico Bowl. Well, they're not involved.
I mean,
in the
theoretically,
playoff.
If you get a playoff system, you know, and again, I don't think it needs to be this elaborate 16-team playoff system. I mean, let's make it 8 teams,
or even
4 teams would be progress. And people say, well, someone's still going to be unhappy. Well, I'd much rather have number 9 be unhappy than number 3, you know? Anyway, that's our little college football diatribe, and I'm sure we can get going more on that. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, that's webradio@patriots.com. It's something that Tom and I feel strongly about, college football. We enjoy watching it, especially on road trip Saturdays when everybody wants to get out and get to the restaurants. Tom and I make sure that we see the end of those 3:30 games before we go anywhere. Anyway, let's move on. We have another email here. This one's from Al in Georgia. Just another ugly win at home. This year we may want to forward to the Pats enjoying the away field advantage come the postseason. Looking at the schedule down the stretch, it looks like the Pats have a decent chance to run the table to 13-3. The toughest game may be the season closer at Tennessee. But also, the Jags are only 2 Houston Texans losses away from having the same record as New England. As for a first-round bye, it looks like we still need lots of help. Looking at the schedules of the other top AFC teams, it appears Baltimore and Indianapolis have the toughest games. The Ravens may stumble and help, but I think you have to pencil in the Chargers for one of the top spots, as they are 10-2 and have 3 more games at home. Also, since the Pats have a head-to-head loss with the Colts, we will have to gain 2 games on them in only 4 weeks. The Colts are at Jacksonville next week and have the Bengals at home the week after. If they win either of those games, we are probably looking at missing a first-round bye, as I do not see Indianapolis losing at either the Texans or to the Dolphins at home while those teams play out their strings. And that's OTIS. Al Fecto.
Well, let me ask you, Paul. I keep hearing about this easy schedule. I got to disagree. You're going to Miami, okay? Now, I know Miami's not great. They played you tough up here, and that's a place you 10-31 lifetime. 10-31. In the 40-year history of the series, you've only won back-to-back games in the state of Miami once, and you won last year. So odds are saying that, you know, you'll probably lose. So that's a tough place to play anywhere. You got Jacksonville, who's a totally different team at home. Now, I don't think they match up well with the Patriots, but still, at home, that's a tough game. And then you're at the Titans, who are on a roll right now, and I don't think you can say anybody can just walk in there and beat the Titans. They're going to fight you. So to me, that's three. The Patriots are better than those three teams, but to just say they're going to win out, I don't know about that.
Yeah, the only one they don't have to show up for is Houston. They'll win that game.
Unless you're Fred Kirsch, who's biting his nails off.
They'll win that game, but the one thing from a Patriots perspective I think that helps us is Miami losing last week kind of lets the air out of that balloon. They had a little something going. They could have got that. You know, they're 6-6, and they're thinking, you know, we can get to 7-6 here and beat the Patriots, and you know, really take a run at getting a 10-6. 10-6 probably going to get you in.
Right. Well, now let me play devil's advocate here. Miami seems to play better when they don't have any pressure on them. So they lose. Now all of a sudden they got nothing to lose this week. You know, they're pretty much out of it. And
that's true. And I think they'll play hard. I think this is an important game for them. And I think that they will play hard. And I agree with what you said about Miami. And it's going to be a tough game. You know, I think it's going to be a tough game. Jacksonville, however, the flip side of it, Jacksonville beat Miami in the game they had to have.
Mm-hmm.
So now, more than likely, Jacksonville is still in it when that game comes around at the end of the year. If they had lost to Miami, yeah, the Miami game might have been a little bit tougher, but the Jacksonville game would have been a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a wash. One of them had a win. And then, you know, Tennessee, I think right now, I don't think Tennessee's a very good team, but you got to give them credit for what they're doing. Vince Young right now, he's not putting up great statistics. He's not, you know, going to confuse anybody with Peyton Manning, but he's just finding ways to make plays.
And
the Titans are playing hard.
Right, and wouldn't you agree, like, these last three road games, they're against AFC teams. This isn't going to Green Bay and going to Minnesota.
This isn't Detroit coming to town where you can play as badly as you did the other day and still win.
Right. Going on the road playing an AFC team like those three teams, it's hard, especially teams that, you know, like you said, Tennessee, yeah, they're 5-7 or whatever, but they're playing well. They're fighting. Jacksonville's in the middle of a playoff race. You got Miami. It's always hard to win down there. I just think it's a little premature to say, well, they're just going to cruise those three games. That's a tough stretch.
And if I had to bet either way, if I had to bet, you know, gun to my head, someone says you have to put $50. Will they win out or won't they win out? I'd probably bet on that they would, that they will win out. But that doesn't mean that I think it's a lock. I certainly wouldn't want to put any money on that.
See, I go the other way. I think they'll lose one more game.
Well, I'll say this. If they don't straighten things out, I'm going on history more than I'm going on with my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because my eyes tell me there's no way that playing the way that they've played the last month, save for one game in Green Bay, that they're going to just beat everybody. But history tells me that in December this is a different team, even though it wasn't a different team on Sunday, and that's basically what I'm going on. So we'll have to see how it all works out here. But let's get to another couple of emails here. Let's see. I have to tell you, I really enjoy the show. It's one of the things I look forward to in the aftermath of a game, as well as the run-up to the next game. Contrary to many of the complaints you guys are getting about going off on tangents such as favorite movies, best vacuum cleaners, age of consent, etc., I think sometimes that is the best part of the show. Alas, there is more to life than the Patriots.
Well, Paul, let me just sneak in real quick.
Go ahead.
We need to talk off air because remember how I was making fun of you and Andy about the vacuum cleaners, and I said, I just buy a vacuum cleaner and it works. Well, it broke. So now I need to know what a good vacuum cleaner is.
That's classic. Yeah, no, I got to get one for Beth for Christmas. She wants to have one at each level of the house. Evidently, that's no longer a luxury. That's now a necessity.
Makes you want to move into a ranch.
Anyway, to tell you the truth, the worst day, in my opinion, on Patriots.com is Monday. The Patriots Monday simulcast is, for the most part, a 12-hour crap fest.
You're making my point.
I can tolerate D&C, especially the quarterback hour. For the most part, the interviews are pretty good. Where it careens off the tracks is from 10 a.m. on. The irrelevant ass-kissing from first-class phony Darrell Arnold and pseudo-football expert
nice
Michael Hawley
bear.
Right through the big O grunt gruntathon is unlistenable. Obviously, it's worth it to stick around for the BB interview, but even that is not must-listen radio. Perillo, I know you got to do what you got to do, but you are much better in the PFW-IP setting. Oh, PFW in progress setting. I'm sorry. I'm not the biggest Felger fan either, but when Andy or Casale count to him, it makes for a good listen. The point of this rant is to find out if you guys would consider doing Monday PFW in progress show and maybe archive it. I think it would be interesting to get your take on that Sunday's game while it is still fresh. By the time Tuesday rolls around, the game has been analyzed to death, and this would give listeners an alternative to the stale Patriots Monday. And that is Matt in Quincy, who obviously is around here to listen to WEEI a lot and offered his take. Not sure if he was making fun of me or complimenting me.
I think he just doesn't like the big show.
When I'm on the big show, evidently, he doesn't like. He thinks I'm different on the big show. Well, it's kind of hard to sift through all the, as you put it, ass-kissing, because there's an awful lot of that goes on.
It's hard to talk vacuums on the big show.
Yeah, and I can't really get into my vacuum cleaner talk either. They don't really like that.
Mondays would be tough because we're not here. Yeah, we work late into the mornings sometimes.
That's the biggest issue with Mondays. It's not so much that we wouldn't want to do it, although they actually do the show for the most part right from our studio, so we couldn't really do that. But we work overnight to get the paper out. Now, 1 o'clock home games is not necessarily overnight is in quotes, but you know, if there's a 4 o'clock game on the road or obviously a night game, we're here through the night into the morning, and it's hard to come back the next day. So that kind of so keep those suggestions to yourself.
Yeah.
We enjoy Monday off. That's the only day we get off a week.
Don't be sending any emails to Fred Kirsch.
If we're on the road, and that means we have to travel on Saturday. So the only off day we legitimately get is Monday. So
yeah, we got a great job, but we work our tails off during the season. Now, don't get me wrong; it evens out because we don't do jack crap in the off season, except talk about the draft.
And when we're quote unquote working our butts off, it's you know we're still covering
football.
And we understand that.
But I just mean like
it's not real life to most.
But just
people.
Like tired wise, we get you know right now we're all pretty tired and cranky.
Tired wise, Gary, or fatigue.
Well, I'm tired. I don't know. I'll say like Muhammad Ali said, if that means tired, I'm it.
Yeah. If that's good, I'm it, right?
Yeah. What was the
Muhammad, no, why are you so truculent?
Truculent. That's it. I don't know what truculent means, but
if it's good, I'm it. He's the best. That reminds me of the Rocky line.
Yeah, they're having that thing on Saturday. I'm taping it, the Ali rap. I'm not sure what it is, but it's supposed to be like his through his career.
Yeah, you might have seen a commercial for that.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, there it is right there.
apparently they said to themselves, hey, that movie really sucked that they made, so why don't we just do something ourselves?
You know what really bothers me about those movies? When they come out, and I didn't really, I saw some of that, not a lot of it.
Here comes the tangent listening audience.
I had enough people that told me that they saw whose opinions like yours that I would respect. And I did see some of it, but when movies like this that are universally by the common people like you and I who don't know what we're watching, didn't like it, didn't entertain us, didn't inform us, didn't do anything for us. But we're told by the people that the critics that are, you know, they can understand a little bit beyond the scope of what we're capable of understanding, and they tell us how wonderful it is. Critically acclaimed movies generally raise my antenna.
Yeah.
I generally don't like critically acclaimed movies of any kind. And sometimes, as a result, I miss movies. And Andy likes to bring up Braveheart,
as
an example. Well, Braveheart was critically acclaimed when it came out. It kind of turned me off to it because I didn't really want any part of it. Didn't really know what it was about. Had no idea what it was about. So I didn't go. I didn't see it. And, you know, Andy makes fun of me about it. But for every one that slips through the cracks that I wish I had seen, there are 100 Ali's that I'm fine with having missed.
You mean like Das Boot that Fred was talking about last week or whatever he was talking about.
Das Boot, that's, I mean, that's an old movie. That's,
is it?
Yeah.
Oh, what's the, oh no, I'm thinking, I'm thinking of My Left Foot.
Oh, My Left Foot is a perfect example. Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah. No, that's what I'm not, no, that's what I'm thinking of. That one, that was
The English Patient.
Acclaimed.
Okay, The English Patient.
I wouldn't watch that if you paid me.
There you go. Now you know where I'm going.
Now I can just go around saying it stinks.
You'd like Das Boot. That's a war movie. You like
Oh, is it? Yeah, I was thinking of My Left Foot.
My Left Foot, yeah, no, no interest there.
First of all, I have no desire to see any movie named My Left Foot. Gary's laughing in there.
What the hell's going on?
No, it's like the emailer said, it's Tuesday. You guys already talked about the game all day yesterday.
And pretty soon we'll be taking a trip. We'll get The Godfather. It's Christmas.
Oh, yeah, it's Christmas.
All right, Josh is next up in Waterloo, Iowa. First, a win is a win. We won even though it was a prototypical trap game, and we came out with a win in the end. I know you guys have been ripping on Dylan about how slow and fat he is and how he, and how if he, how if his 20-yard runs would have been Maroney, they would have been touchdowns. But Maroney is not hitting the holes like Dylan is. I think he needs more patience or better vision. And Maroney is not the only one that gets better as the game goes on, as Dylan's three touchdowns would show you. I guess I missed the part of the game that Dylan got better.
Yeah. What carries
if you're inside the 5-yard line, I want Dylan on the field because he'll get it in the end zone.
When did we ever not say that?
That's all I can say for Corey Dillon. If we're inside the 5, I want him on the field. Asante is a great number 2 cornerback, but he is just an average number 1 cornerback. Give him a good deal, but don't break the bank for him. I have seen him get beat way too many times. I'll give another vote for podcasting John's show. That gets us up, by the way, to 40, Gary. The John Rook Podcast tote board is now at 40. So, Josh, you know, who knows, maybe we'll get a special promotional gift for you for being the 40th member of the John Rook tote board, podcast tote board. Let's see. What kind of time does it involve for you on your end for a 2-hour show to get the podcast up there?
Well, nothing for us. We don't do anything.
Yeah, I wash my hands of the whole process.
Well, I just want to say something about Dylan. It's funny these people are coming out of the woodworks here now that he scored 3 touchdowns, because I remember the beginning of the season a lot of these emailers writing in about 1,300 yards, 1,500 yards, and me putting up autographed jerseys saying he wouldn't reach 1,000.
You got all mad at me because you said I guaranteed that he'd run for 1,000 yards.
Where have these people been? Where you been all year? Backing your boy. Where you all been? Now he scores 3 touchdowns to Zach Crockett or Marion Barber or anybody else that has goal line carries could have scored, and you're talking about how great he is? Give me a break.
I don't understand why you run for, you know, whatever amount of touchdowns. What does he have for touchdowns in the year?
I don't know, like 12, 14, something around there. Barber has 16.
I don't understand why you get these touchdowns and all of a sudden that means, you know, you're running great. I don't really look at it like that.
Well, you're supposed to run great throughout the game. That's what the Patriots are missing. So when he provides that, then I'll listen. And if Maroney can't go on Sunday, you get your chance. We'll see how it works out.
Let's see here. Terrence is in Oceanside, California. He says, huh? 3rd and 18 doesn't really scare the Lions? That Belichick guy sounds like he really knows a thing or two about football. Maybe his players should start listening to him. Yeah, that was obviously
the
in relation to the several 3rd and longs that the Lions somehow converted in that game on Sunday. There's some concerns here. I mean, we can't you can't just dismiss them all. There's some concerns. They're allowing, like I said, when they don't get a lot of pressure on the passer, it seems the quarterback is going to have a guy to throw to.
Right.
And that's a concern.
Yeah, and Paul, you said like concerns, and then we get yelled at for being negative.
Oh yeah.
But you got to remember something. If this was the Colts, we'd be breaking down their concerns because they have concerns. The Chargers, you don't think they have concerns?
Well, it's like I said, you know, everybody wants to sit there and say there's no good team out there. Look at how they're winning. You know, some of the people in the Patriots, you know, have been like, "Well, win." I mean, that says a lot about the team to play that badly and find a way to win. Why doesn't it say a lot about the Colts? Why doesn't it say a lot about the Chargers a couple of weeks ago?
The Ravens.
When they were in a kind of a slugfest with Cleveland.
Right.
You know? I don't understand why we only use those lower standards for our team. But the other teams are held to this. They have to be like the 85 Bears or the 72 Dolphins and just, you know, dominate. I don't know. I don't get it. We'll end up getting ripped for it because, you know, we're perceived as being negative. But
yeah, but we're talking about what some of the problems are with the team. Every team, there's no team right now that's undefeated. Every team has problems. Even if you're on a winning streak, the Cowboys are on a winning streak. They got problems.
I was just going to say the Chicago Bears won a game the other day that they had no business winning with their quarterback throwing for 34 yards and posting a passer rating that would make
Blutarski
proud. Yeah. 1.3. I've never seen one that low, win, lose, or draw.
Right.
I've never seen anything like that. And they're all over the place. You know, they're going to make a move. They can't do this. They can't keep winning. But here, it's like, no problems. You know, we turned the ball over three more times this week, but we took it away five times. So
right.
I just don't understand that. Like, everywhere else, there seems to be concern. In New England, well, we found a way to win. That's a good sign of a good team. I don't get that. Don't get it.
The one thing that the Patriots have is that they have Brady. And the last 2 weeks, they might not win either game if they don't have him making those throws in crunch time. And, see, that's the one advantage they get in these close games, where I think the Bears, it goes the other way. Because when you need to make a play on offense, they can't make it.
That's true.
You know, we'll have to see how that goes in the playoffs. You know what else I'm interested, though? If anyone that watched the Monday night game, what did you guys think of D'Angelo Williams? Because I know there was controversy. You know, Joey Feep won't listen to the show anymore because I said D'Angelo Williams was
better
than Maroney. But I saw the kind of player that doesn't come around. You know, the guy that cuts, the quickness. I wonder what Patriots fans thought, because he's been injured and he finally got healthy. And we've been saying it all year, Paul. Deshaun Foster may be arguably the worst starting running back in pro football.
I think he's an excellent third down back. He is miscast as an every down running back, in my opinion.
So I'd be wondering what Patriots fans thought about him if you saw him last night.
And Tom Jackson made a comment last night in the post game saying, you know, don't get hurt and let that rookie get on the field, and you won't get the job back.
Yeah, well, we won't be seeing Deshaun Foster
no more. Won't be seeing him no more. Anyway, Tom is in Nottingham, England. He says, I'm guessing that wasn't quite what we all had in mind in terms of winning, but a win is a win. Notice Jackson was made inactive. Is that a sign that Bill has finally given up on him, or is he trying to make him realize he has got to do more work in order to step up? Well, he was added to the injury list, Tom, late in the week with a groin injury that he suffered during practice on Thursday, so that's why he was inactive. One problem that amazed me when it happened, their backup quarterback was making receptions. What the hell? That guy's meant to throw the ball, not catch it. BB really needs to give them a mouthful this week because Miami will kill us if we play like that. Well done, Corey. With Maroney having a shocking game, we might need to keep him next season because he's the guy making all the plays. I think we might have to just give up on the Dylan thing.
Yeah.
Like I said at the start.
I love the 1 week thing. Where have you been all year? It's week 13. Where have you all been? You waited till he scored three short touchdowns to give us the I told you so? That's a joke.
Like I said at the start, a win is a win, but I much prefer the team that killed Green Bay 35-0 a couple of weeks back. Just shows just how inconsistent this team is.
Well, Paul, whatever, I don't know what else your wife needs, but whatever she needs, I'll give it to her because I'll guarantee if Corey Dillon's on this team next year, I'll get your wife, if she needs like another, you know, another something for the bathroom upstairs, it's not downstairs, or whatever else she needs to clean the house with, she can get it from me if Corey Dillon's on this team next year. That's how sure I am he won't be here.
You know, usually on Tuesdays, you know, Beth is home listening to the PFW in Progress. I hope she's documenting what we need.
I don't want to see that list.
Oh, she could definitely put one together, let me tell you. Well, you know, this whole thing with Corey Dillon, what's his longest touchdown run of the year? Can't be more than 10 yards.
It's not that long. I know his longest run was the 50-yarder against the Jets that he broke off. But
I just don't see making the plays part of this.
No, because he'll run for 26 yards, and he'll end up with 12 carries for 40 yards.
He's a good goal line back, but I don't understand why that means he's making the plays. I don't.
No, and now we're getting criticized for wanting the more explosive big play guy on the field. I'm sorry. We just want the Patriots to win. I thought that's what everybody was in this for. Felger said it on his show. When he says he doesn't want Corey Dillon in the game, he's got an agenda. I said, you know what my agenda is? To get the best players on the field.
Yeah.
And if you think Dillon's better than Maroney, then you see in a different game than I am. That's
right.
All I can say.
Exactly. So, I guess we'll just leave it at that. You know, Corey, I want him on the field in goal line situations. I think he's a good goal line runner, but I have no doubt that, Maroney can get the ball in the end zone too.
Right.
You know, as he did against, I think, Chicago.
Yeah, I got news for you. At the University of Minnesota, they weren't taking out Maroney and putting in Marion Barber. If Maroney was on the field, he just ran it in. So.
Well, I guess we'll just have a difference of opinion for that. Yep, more emails coming in. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, webradio@patriots.com. Good time to step aside. Maybe, just maybe, Tom, Andy Hart will be done with that, the end of his brain surgery upstairs. He'll join us for the second hour. We'll be back after this.
Exclusively from the New England Patriots, signed by Benjamin Watson. Free! His authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, a senior face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet. Autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed by Benjamin Watson.
Well, it's that time of year again when Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty new Snack Wrap from McDonald's. It's a premium chicken select with lettuce, cheddar jack cheese, and ranch sauce, all wrapped in a warm flour tortilla. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select, and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly, my hips start shaking, and my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
It's the cola.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4-FORD-10. Ford, bold moves.
Come on, baby.
Hey, sweetie, when I picked up the dry cleaning today, I put 43 cents into our savings.
I'll alert the media.
Introducing Keep the Change from Bank of America.
And at lunch, I put away 61 cents.
Really? That much?
Each time you buy something with your Bank of America Visa check card, we round up the amount to the next dollar. and transfer your change from your checking to your savings account.
I checked online, and so far we've saved $2.25.
Wow, a whole $2.25.
Try $225.
Oh.
Plus, we'll match 100% of your Keep the Change savings for the first 3 months and continue matching 5% up to $250 a year.
I'm back from the store. Just saved 8 cents.
I'll alert the media.
Open a checking account and keep the change. Only at Bank of America. Higher standards. Match paid annually after anniversary of enrollment. Savings accounts include regular savings with annual percentage yield of 0.5%. Member FDIC. Patent pending.
Now Andy has to be here. Christmas music being played on PFW in progress, and Andy's not here.
You know what the problem is? He answers a question, he gets up, he starts yapping. He's like a little girl.
That's true. That is true. Oh, I didn't know about the question part. I just hit the little girl part.
Sucked that bone dry.
And getting smaller and smaller by the week as well.
Yeah, he's looking like a little girl.
Yeah, it's really... It's tough to watch.
You know those natural athletes, they lose 30 pounds in a month, Paul, no problem.
I am what I am, and that's all that I am.
That ought to get him down here.
I am a loser.
How'd you get him to say that?
I believe he was reading an email.
Yeah, that's definitely what he was doing. That was a little side comment.
Dude, this is what you guys always do. You change my argument and put words in my mouth.
I like when he gets all mad. Those are my favorites. Anyway, before we get accused of going off on another tangent.
Andy Hart mad!
Let's get to some more emails because they're still coming in at a rapid rate, and I want to see if we can get to everybody here on a second hour of PFW in progress in the aftermath of a disappointing win. Can we use that oxymoron?
Yeah, I guess. They didn't play well. It's not necessarily the score. Like, if the Lions played a phenomenal game, you know, and just really
If the Lions played a phenomenal game, then game, set, match.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's more that the Patriots kind of... And the other thing I should mention that I didn't like hearing was the players after the game saying they weren't really into the game at
how
first.
How dead it was. You could sense the lack of energy in the stadium. I think Artrell Hawkins said
that. Not that doesn't happen, but usually you don't say it. That it was that. You know, you just say, well, you know, they played pretty well and blah, blah, blah. But I was surprised to hear that. We were just making fun of your 30-pound weight loss.
Andy Hart, ladies and gentlemen, joining us on PFW in Progress. Let's get as he
weight loss is going to be up to 35 pounds. There's no chip. Can you hear me?
Well, I can
unfortunately,
hear you,
yes.
You're sitting right across from me, so I guess I can.
There it is. I would have been here earlier. But
you had
a loser.
Today is clearly a bad day, and you know how they say things.
You had to chew the rag after every question.
Bad things coming. What rag?
I don't know.
I was
going to
say shoot the poop, but you know we're on radio.
Chew the rag.
Chew
never
the
heard
fat
that before. Chew the fat.
Chew the fat.
All right, let's bring it into the 90s.
I think it was the 70s.
Because shooting the poop. I mean that's a today kind of phrase.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But anyway. Bad things come in threes, and I've got my first two of the day. First, I'm on the last question.
Went in as a hot dog and came out as orange fire water.
Oh, great. Not that. Haven't had that issue today, but I'm finishing the last answer.
They ain't over yet.
I see the phone ring, and I look at the little screen, and it says 401 whatever, and I go, don't recognize the number. But, you know, I'm thinking positive holiday season. Things have been going pretty good for Andy lately. Maybe it's a job offer.
I'm already shaking my head.
And Brian Moore.
I was going to say, only bad things emanate from the 401 area code.
If it was a job offer, that would have been a good day for everybody.
35 minutes later. It's true. 35 minutes later, I'm still talking to Brian Morey. And then while doing this, I'm finishing up, and I go to do the stupid thing to post Ask PFW.
And you deleted it by accident.
But he got his hands
couldn't get in.
On
couldn't get
so in. Many balls.
And it locked, but it wasn't locked, so because I got to go to our IT. It wasn't locked. It locked. New password. Wasn't locked. Took me half hour to do that. I could have been down here like 12:15 if those two things. Now I'm just watching out for the third rock to fall and crush me.
Yeah, I know what that's going to be.
What?
Fred's Jeep breaking down on the way home.
Probably. Yeah. I heard a question. I don't know if you guys, any of the radio stations you listen to, there's this like deal of the day that one of the dealerships does on the radio every day, and they have a one-day offer on a certain car. Fred tells us his Jeep is worth like 10 grand, right?
Yes,
with 165,000 yeah. miles.
10
today,
grand?
Today, a 2005 Jeep Wrangler loaded, which I know for a fact from being inside this Jeep, is not loaded. It's the anti-loaded. It's unloaded. A Jeep Wrangler, 7,000 miles, 2005, was 14.9, but his is worth 10. Yeah, right, Fred. Tell me another
it's
one.
It's the engine.
I don't think that's worth 10 brand new.
Ridiculous.
Fred.
I couldn't believe it. I laughed out loud when the guy goes, loaded, 2005 Wrangler Sport, 14.9.
More importantly, it took Brian Morey 35 minutes to tell you the Patriots were great.
I forgot what the, oh, he wants to talk about the ticket thing. Going after D'Ossi and their take, Smurlis, they took his tickets away, StubHub.
I got no interest in that.
I didn't really either. I said, frankly, we haven't really talked about it much because I don't really care. I guess he brings up a good point. Why did they start going after these and where does it end? Because there's a lot of improprieties in the ticket business.
Well, I think when they
there.
Did the reason, the timing, I believe, is because they recently had that suit against StubHub.
No, but he wanted to know where that one came from.
Oh.
What started that? Because why aren't they going after Ace tickets of Quincy or, you know, there's a lot of things I'm sure they could go after. I don't know how they all work. I don't know the issues.
Yeah, no, I don't.
But
either.
I also, like
and
Tom said, don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I don't care either.
I'm not in the ticket meeting.
Bill doesn't care about tickets either.
Either
I think if Bill
know.
Had his way, he'd play in front of an empty crowd, empty stadium, if he could decide.
Like BU in Vermont did.
The measles game, that was Siena, I believe.
I was just going to let it fly. I had no idea what he's talking about.
No, I guess Siena and Vermont mixed up because I used to root for Siena living in
Loudonville.
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, living near Albany, Loudonville. And then I went
How
to
about
Vermont.
That, huh?
Loudonville? Not Loudon in New Hampshire? Loudonville, New York?
No, Loudonville, New York.
Interesting.
It's a hole.
Boy, I've really brought this show to a screeching
halt.
Yeah. Right, huh?
I'm going to go on. I'm going to go on to the next email here, and this is, I believe, our buddy.
Well,
and
first, let me just ask right, Andy. We've been getting killed on here for the Corey Dillons. Did you think Corey Dillon had a great game?
No. I thought he had an embarrassing game because he kept asking out even though the guy he splits carries with was out of the game.
Now, and do you think that Zach Crockett could have done the exact same thing that he did and scored 3 touchdowns inside the – that's what Zach Crockett used to
and
do.
And I'd still like to question the third touchdown.
I don't think it was a touchdown.
Well, and the other thing about those – and I know this is going to sound weird because it's going to sound like I'm penalizing him for this, but I'm not. I think they were all on first down. They're all first and goal carries. Like, to me, a third and goal carry, okay, now that's a special, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not penalizing them for getting in on one and not needing 3 cracks. That's not my point. But they make it sound like there was one guy said he's the one making all the plays. That's a play? A 2-yard touchdown run on first and goal?
Yeah, I don't
that's
get
making
it.
A play?
And can I ask a question? Because I'm naive and young and didn't see any of the running backs that played before 1988. Whenever Bo came into the league.
Oh, by the way, just let me interrupt you for a second. Classic yesterday, an Auburn-Alabama game from 83. That's unbelievable 67-yard touchdown.
The one where
Bo.
He has like 250.
Why didn't you call me?
Oh, my God. He starts off to the left, is like gets all boxed in, nothing there.
Oh, I think I've seen that run, yeah.
Quick cut, bang, up, outside, and just gone. I mean, even Keith Jackson said he was gone.
Greatest athlete that's ever walked the planet. Anyway,
I was watching the
replay of some of the game. And, well, I should take the source into consideration, Matt Vasgersian, whoever he is. They said, greatest contact runner in the history of the game. Well, maybe Tom Jackson said
I was going to say Tom Jackson said that.
As okay. Jim Brown.
Well, that's what I want to say. I've seen highlights of Jim Brown, Earl Campbell, and guys that I say, I've never seen Corey Dillon do those things. Heck, Walter Payton. I've seen ridiculous highlights.
Wait a minute.
I'm
not saying that he's the best, but I don't. I want to put the brakes on here and say I've never seen Corey Dillon do those things.
I just don't feel like I've seen in his highlights.
When Corey Dillon was in Cincinnati, he did those
things.
I'm
not saying he's not a great running back. I'm not saying he's not the 11th best or 15th best, but the best contact runner in the history of the game.
If you wanted to say like the last 10 years, I think you could make an argument for that.
Oh, well, I think that would go without question.
Yeah, I just
with the best of all time. Now, and I obviously have never seen Jim Brown play, but if you polled 100 people that have seen both those guys play, I say 99. Say
right.
Jim Brown.
I think that all three of the guys that you mentioned
Tom
are probably better.
Tom Jackson's still trying
at
to suck up.
I think you probably named 3 but guys, Andy. Earl
I'm
Campbell,
and I'm just those
Earl
guys.
Campbell,
I'm basing
Payton,
on seeing their NFL
have,
film show and saying, "Wow,
I have
it's not
seen
one
Corey
highlight;
Dillon
it's a whole show."
Like that in Cincinnati. I haven't seen him run like that really in New England. A little bit
because he runs to the right with the ball in his left hand and has no way to run over people.
That first year back in 2004, a little bit, I saw him do some of that stuff. But, I mean, he ran that game that he ran for 300 yards or, you know, close to it against Denver. It's not just all,
take
a pitch and get to the outside and go untouched.
But I'm saying, like, the pure visual. Like, I'm not sure he even has the highlights to compete with those guys. He's very good, powerful runner, great runner. You know, borderline Hall of Famer. I think that's a fair argument. Mm-hmm. But
he's a Hall of Famer.
Was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's all I'm questioning.
And I would agree.
It's one of those where everyone always feels like they have to. Corey Dillon's not good enough, so we need to be right. We need to over. How about he's just one of the best 20 runners or whatever you want to call it?
I'll go back to last year or the year before. Whenever I saw Jonathan Vilma, and they said the hardest running back in the NFL to tackle, and he said by far Corey Dillon.
Right.
He said over Jerome Bettis, he said Corey Dillon's the hardest to tackle.
Right.
So there's definitely a case to be made that over the last few decade or so, he's definitely one of the top contact runners in the game. But to say over Jim Brown.
Some of those Earl Campbell highlights you see are just ridiculous.
Well, when you have to change the way you dress in the NFL over a certain player and change the jersey.
So remember that Monday night game against Miami that he got the jersey ripped off him, and then that game against the Rams where he hit, I think it was Isaiah Robertson, right in the chest. Oh.
And the hit between him and Jack and Tatum where they just knocked each other out at the goal line. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that one.
Him and Tatum, boom, at the goal line. Campbell went for Tatum, got the worst of it actually, but it was one of the greatest hits you'll ever see, and Campbell ended up scoring on the play.
I think it's funny when Paul goes, "You remember that game?"
And Tom knows.
I know he knows, but to me, an Earl Campbell game might as well be George Washington crossing the Delaware River. It's history.
I've given up on you.
Like, I've seen the highlights and I know what happened.
Tom's not that much older than you, but he's actually seen
significantly older than me.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
I was gambling when I was 8.
Tom's as close to you as he is to me. That's how old he is.
But that was a good line right there.
Not really a line.
The New England fans here, they're going to bust you for putting Jim Brown and Earl Campbell in the same class with the great Corey Dillon. He had 40 yards,
That's impressive.
I don't even think he had that many, did he?
I might have been the week before. I lose track of the 32, 40-yard
No, I think
game.
He had like 20-something, didn't he? 27? 37?
Yeah, 9 for 25.
25?
Oh, he had 25 yards this week, and we're hearing how great he is. That's amazing.
He must have had a pretty good fantasy week, with three scores, huh?
Where's all the people in the preseason that were giving me 1,300, 1,500, 1,400? Where are all those people?
Right. The one thing, I brought this up off the air to you, Paul, and I don't know if it's necessarily fact. I'm not even sure if he wrote it, but Michael Felger told me that not only did he ask out of the game, he didn't want – he wasn't prepared to come in when they called on him on a third and one.
Is that why Pass was in the game?
Yeah, it's third and one that Pass ran, and Michael Felger said – that Dillon, they asked him to go in, and he wasn't ready to go in.
Well, there has to be something, because we said in the press box, listen, is Dillon hurt? Because if you're not going to use Dillon on third and one,
he just wasn't ready.
If he's not on the field on third and one, he should be cut.
Well, he was supposed to be.
Because he came in the next play. Remember, that's where he scored the touchdown.
Right.
He came in, and so that's interesting. That's very interesting.
All right, let's get on with some emails.
Did you eat the chips?
There was one bag of pretzels here.
That's a yes. Somebody ate them.
But, well, actually, technically, no. I had a bag of pretzels. There were no chips.
It's a crunchy substance.
We had no delivery yesterday, Andy.
Yeah, I know. They were upstairs, right? And the Sun chips all went to Gary's apartment.
Nothing. You got nothing on that one. Anyway, Matt's in Quincy again.
That means he's really mad.
I want to get to some of these emails, Andy, because there's a lot of them piling up, so stop. I thought John Tomasi hit it right on the nose with his article regarding uncharacteristic mistakes by the Patriots this year. Two really stood out to me from the Lions game. When Kevin Jones caught a pass for a short gain and fell to the ground, defenders all around him and no one touched him. Then he got up and tacked on another 10 yards. That's something the Raiders would do. But really, by this point in the season, no team should be making these kinds of mental errors. The second one was Brady attempted to throw a pass and the ball was stripped. It looked like his arm was still coming back, and I was surprised it was not reviewed.
Which one?
It looked like his arm was still coming back, and I was surprised it was not reviewed. What was worse, though, was a couple of Pat's linemen standing around looking at the ball and no one diving on it. Not the one in the end zone, but earlier. The play was ruled dead and the pass incomplete, but it was very close, and a heady team... Okay, so it's not the safety.
Well, that was the screen pass that I thought was illegal... forward pass that hit a lineman.
But it was a very close, and a heady team knows to jump on the ball and not take a chance.
They were standing around looking at it.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely right about that. Originally, when I said I didn't know what he was talking, I thought he was talking about the safety play. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously a different one.
Just to jump to the defense of the punchline there, the Raiders. The Raiders are playing pretty good defensively right now.
Well, yeah.
So maybe we should find a different team to beat up on there.
Just, you know, let me get to the rest of this email, and then we'll go on a Raiders tangent. To me, all of these mistakes reveal a disturbing trend. Championship teams do not make these errors. Finally, did anyone notice Vrabel and Triplett having an animated conversation shortly after the ridiculous timeout screw-up by the officials? I could just picture Vrabel saying to Triplett, "You idiot, don't tell me you can call a timeout when you don't have any left. I'm the reason they came up with that rule." Every time I see Triplett, I cringe. One of the worst crews in the league, surpassed only by Jerry Austin's crew. On the other hand, two tight shirts aside, I think Ed Hockley and his crew are the best. I wonder if any of you guys would care to share who you think are the best and worst crews. Bernie Kukar's crew will always be the best. He let the boys play in Super Bowl 36. I like that. He likes that crew because they let them play in the Super Bowl. That if they had an over-officious referee, might have had a very different outcome.
Well, we all know who I think's the worst.
Mike Carey. Tom has definitely opened my eyes to the Mike Carey thing.
I guess I'm lagging behind because I don't tend to notice crews and what they do.
I don't,
as
I
much
don't,
as,
you know, I don't either.
And that's why Mike Carey is the worst, because when he officiates a game, on TV more than the players.
Right. But I feel like every crew, no matter who it is, you see a bad call every week. I don't think there's any crew where I'd say, whoo, if they do my game, I feel like I'm going to, not a bad call will happen today. So, yeah, I don't. And the Vrabel thing, it's sort of a different rule, right? That's the one about the back-to-back timeouts that they changed because of Vrabel, right?
Yeah, technically it was a different rule.
Because you still, there is a penalty on a field goal if you call timeout and don't have it to try to mess with the kicker,
right.
The referee said. I didn't look it up, so I'm going by Triplett's words here, but...
Right. Well, clearly they made a mistake. They said they made a mistake.
Well,
they,
and the clear thing is, it's one mistake. That's the problem. One guy, the crew of, how many are in a crew? Six, whatever it is?
Seven, I think.
If one whistle blows, the play's dead. And even if the referee and the five other guys know that they weren't supposed to do it, it only takes one guy to blow his whistle.
Right. You know what's funny about that play? I don't think you guys caught it, but I was sitting next to Fred in the press box. And after the timeout, at least 12 people mumbled, "Chris Webber, Chris Webber, Chris Webber." And like 3 minutes later, Fred yells out at the top of his lungs, "That's a Chris Webber timeout." He was waiting for everybody to laugh. And like 100 people had already said it.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
Bingo.
Alex is next up. He says, "Hello, A-team. Yes, I'm assuming Fred's not there."
Hey, and no shot at Andy. Nice.
I figured I would pile on Fred after you just made that line. What does a coach see in training camp and during practice? I can't see why a Hall of Fame coach like Bill Parcells would not see our good pal Drew was outplayed by Romo. Is it a constant in Parcells to choose poorly? Because in his first year as a Giants coach, he sat Sims in favor of Scott Bruner. Or is he an overrated Hall of Famer?
Oh, wait a minute.
Well, that's not exactly true, first of all. Scott Bruner and Sims were both the quarterbacks, and Sims was constantly hurt the first 3 or 4 years of his career. And Scott Bruner actually took the team to the playoffs. The playoffs, and I believe in Parcells' second year. Remember the first year they went like 3-12-1, and then they went to the playoffs
and
with Bruner.
The other problem is... That's a tough decision to make. A guy that's unproven based on training camp action, say, okay, I'm going to play him over our starting quarterback. And maybe he's an overrated Hall of Famer, but you know what? There might be an overrated Hall of Famer that works at this very stadium that wasn't willing to make that change based on a young, up-and-coming, unproven player outplaying Drew Bledsoe in training camp. Oh, it's Tom Brady. And he was saved by an injury.
And I'll go with Tom here. Maybe you can make an argument that Romo should have been in before he was. But I don't think there's any way that he should have broken camp with Romo.
My argument is after the Eagles game.
Maybe he should have done before he did.
When you watched the Eagles game, when you saw those passes that were reminiscent of the Jacksonville game, you had to say to yourself, all right, that's it. You know, we got to go in a different direction.
But
I thought he was 2 weeks late.
If you believe Bill in that story that that guy did, good one, that story that guy did, the writer, Michael Lewis,
I still have
he says... He was considering it that night, the Jacksonville night. He was considering When do I get rid of Drew? When do I go with Romo? And he was considering. I don't necessarily criticize. I think that's a hard decision to make
a couple games
into the season because you can't go back.
I actually think it's the wrong decision to make coming out of camp just for that reason. Because now you set your team up for complete failure.
Right.
Because if you go with Romo when he's not the guy, you can't go back to Bledsoe. Whereas if you do it the other way and you stick with Bledsoe when he's not the guy, you can go to Romo. Right. And if he is not the guy, well, you're dead anyway.
And Paul, I'll give another example of Parcells being lucky. He did it the other way in New York when he started with Glenn Foley, and Foley got injured in the second game, and Vinny Testaverde came in, and they ended up going to the AFC Championship game. Now, maybe they go to the AFC Championship game with Foley, but bottom line is Foley's out of football 2 years
later.
They
were 1-3.
Right.
So I think that you get lucky there. But I think if you break camp with Romo, you get nothing out of your backup quarterback now.
Right.
Whereas if you break camp with Bledsoe and he plays well, you're okay. If he plays poorly, you go to Romo and at least you have a chance.
That situation, I think, is one of the hardest decisions in football. Because football is, the quarterback is such a key position, not just in terms of on the field, but leadership, locker room, that whole thing. That's hard to criticize a coach.
And the other thing, that I got news for you. If Bledsoe played as well as he did even last year, this year, they wouldn't have had to make the move. He played poorly. That's why they had to make the move. You know, so the Parcells probably also had that in the back of his mind. But anyway, a lot of tangent talk today.
Okay.
Some of our listeners actually like our tangents.
And
like,
some hate it. I know. It's
like vacuum cleaner talk.
Oh, nice.
Did you hear me on the story? Remember how I made fun? And we'll talk about this off air. But remember how I made fun of you guys about talking about a vacuum? And I said I just buy a vacuum and it works. It broke. now there's pine needles all over the place. We can't pick up.
Yeah, happen if you see this. Your problem is twofold. One, you have no vacuum cleaner that works, and two, you have a real tree.
The problem is that
you got a tree.
Yeah. The problem is I'm the butt of God's jokes. He just waits for me to speak, and then boom.
But I've started to learn that vacuum cleaners are like you buy them every couple of years because the one I have. Dieter goes, why isn't it working? And apparently when you get new carpet, when you vacuum, it sucks up a lot of stuff. But from the point of the vacuum from the point of where it starts sucking.
what part of
off-air? All the way through the vacuum was blocked up. And she goes, I don't know why it's not working. Well, because it's jammed up so tight. She's lucky she didn't start a fire.
Gary, you got a sound bite there, man, if you want one. Sucking, jammed up.
I wasn't talking about Andre Tippett.
Orange fire. Oh, God. Luis is next up. I believe
went in as a hot dog and came out as orange fire water.
Great. I believe he's in Tampa. Says, hi, guys. Nice job, as always. There's no better team right now than the Chargers, but do you foresee another Schottenheimer implosion in the playoffs? Can you tell me about his tenure in Kansas City? I've read that he had a Chiefs team loaded with talent but failed miserably in the playoffs.
Yeah, and part of that has to do with an offensive coordinator by the name of Paul Hackett, who, when he gets in a big game, refuses to use any offensive weapons that he has, runs the ball up the gut. That's probably Schottenheimer's fault for having someone just as conservative as he is as his offensive coordinator. The one thing I'll say here is Cam Cameron, the offensive coordinator now, is not conservative. So if Schottenheimer lets him be, like he said he was going to.
Right, he had that quote where he said, if you're the offensive coordinator, if you don't want to do overrule me. It's your job.
If that's the case, they should be okay. So, because when you align yourself with someone who's just as conservative as you are, then you're going to be conservative.
Right. But as I said to Tom, I just don't. I agree that the Chargers have the potential to be the most dominant team in football. Just not sure they're living up to it at this point. I mean, every week they have to come back to win.
Yeah.
Well, and I said to him,
they blew doors off this week.
No, I know. But who they play?
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Great team.
Buffalo stinks.
Obviously, you know, I haven't been listening to
Buffalo stinks. But every week, I looked in the thing, the Chargers have scored something like 150 points in the fourth quarter, by far more than any other team in the league. So I think there's a chance you play that way in the postseason, much like the Patriots thing of turning the ball over, you play that way in the postseason, you lose. I think if you go down 17 points in the postseason, you probably lose.
Yeah.
That's a good, I mean.
I think the bottom line with the Chargers is that's at San Diego, that's the worst game for the Patriots.
I think that's the worst game for everybody because I just think they have the most talent. They're young players. I just think they're remarkably talented.
Well, it was one of those things, too, when you just talked about, Andy, that I mentioned to Tom, is we look at San Diego and we say, well, you know, they were in a slugfest with Cleveland a couple of weeks ago. They've you know, had to come from behind a couple of times. They're not that good. You know, Indy, they can't stop the run. They squeak by these games. Yep. They're not that good. Baltimore, they lost to Cincinnati. They're not that good. Chicago, they have all kinds of questions. But no one looks at the Patriots and says, well, they had all they could do to beat the Detroit Lions. Win's a win. You find a way to win. Good teams. They win in the fourth quarter.
I'm not sure about
that. Are you listening?
I think a lot of fans are down.
Are you listening?
I think a lot of fans are very down.
Not these emailers. These emailers were down when we beat the Bears.
Now they're sky high because they found a way to win in the fourth quarter while playing
these people. I just can't get it. I don't get them.
I'm a man of the people. And out on the street, I hear some people that are down.
Not according to the people who email Felger's show.
Yeah, people named Ben Dover.
Hey, I don't know who it was, but it wasn't me.
All right, Early Doucette is next up.
Hey. And LSU big, baby. I'm waiting for the public to bet that line down to 7. They'll name their score against Notre Dame. Name it. They'll destroy Notre Dame.
Am I going to have to hear about this for a month
now? Oh, they'll kill Notre Dame.
I don't know, but they might not have any fans there because they might all
They'll
be
all
broke.
They'll all be at the Rose Bowl.
At the Rose Bowl.
But my money will be on LSU and the Sugar Bowl.
First of all, I think all of us should admit we were wrong about Richay Caldwell. It's amazing that this guy has gone from hands of stone to hands of glue. He had a better work ethic and more determination than we gave him credit for early on. While it might be nice to have an elite receiver, I'd rather have the adequate get-the-job-done guys than someone who sulks when they don't get the ball enough and needs a lot of attention. That's a pretty positive way of looking at not having a lot of talent at receiver. It's also imperative that Watson work on holding on to the ball. Tom should tell him to squeeze that thing like he squeezed Tara Reid. I like that. Bet Tom squeezed so hard he damaged those implants.
No, she didn't have them at that time.
Everyone seems in distress that they didn't blow the Lions out. A win is a win. Style points don't count. Turnovers and dumb penalties have
amazing.
To stop for sure. Sometimes you play to the level of competition. The Lions only scored one touchdown, so the defense made plays when it had to. How do you think Denver and Indy people feel now? Great show as always. Russell from the Implant Augmented OC.
Well, let me hit on two things here. One, they beat the Bears, and we were all like, what a great win. We come on here on Tuesday, and everybody's makes it seem like they're the worst team in football. Then they struggle against the Lions, and everyone's talking about how great they are. And also, if you go back to a previous issue of PFW, Andy and I were arguing about Richay Caldwell, and I believe I said 65 catches, book it.
And I believe I said he wouldn't lead the team. What did I say?
I don't know. I just remember saying that stupid thing and thinking to myself, boy, I don't believe this.
Well, I don't think any of us said he stunk and had hands of stone and couldn't play. We said he was a good complimentary receiver, but if you miscast him as your number one go-to guy, you're not that good.
Well, we were talking
before
you went down about, like, if it was they expected Deion Branch to be back. So if you had Deion Branch, Watson, and Caldwell,
you'd be fine.
You're okay.
Because he'd be David Givens. You'd be fine.
We're surprised that as the number one guy, he's doing as well as he is.
Yeah, I was wrong.
No one thought
and
about
people it, praised him right up until he dropped the touchdown pass in Atlanta. People were praising his camp
action. I was highly impressed with his training camp.
Ron Borges jumped on the rip job bandwagon right when he bounced off his hands in Atlanta.
Well, that's a funny story because I was standing there waiting to get into the locker room when Borges says to me, Couldn't catch in San Diego. Can't catch here. Nothing's changed.
I'll admit I'm not gonna fall in line. I was wrong.
I was too.
He's a better player than I thought he was.
He's probably better than. But I just don't think we said he shouldn't be in the National Football League.
Oh,
we
God,
said
no.
he shouldn't be
I
a team's
he was,
number one receiver.
I thought
and he is.
I thought
right.
And he is. And I don't think I think part of it is he's been able to succeed because of Brady.
Right.
But I think that he's made plays. He's made good plays over the last 6 weeks and. You know, based on what I saw in the first 6 weeks, I didn't think he was capable of this. If you said to me, you just wait, the next 6 weeks he's going to show you, I would have said no way.
Yeah, he's made some tough catches, too.
He's also, he succeeded with Brady, that's fine. But
he's made big
Brady
made
screwed
big
him
catches.
This
yeah.
week a couple of times with some of the throws that he couldn't reach and flumbling ducks that were running. Cost him a touchdown pass, cost him two other receptions. So.
And it wasn't so
They're
much.
Even.
I didn't so much. Based my opinion on the fact that he had stone hands, because I didn't really see that. I mean, he dropped a pass against Atlanta, and he's had a couple others that I thought he should have caught. But I just didn't think that he was consistent enough to get open at the amount of time. And he's
I
been
thought he'd
wide
have trouble
open.
Getting open.
He's been wide open in most of the games
Not
recently.
Paul, they run his own.
That's true, which automatically means that the other team should just pick you apart. Anyway, Gerard is in Rhode Island. I just figured
See, it could have been Gerard that called me and not Brian Morey.
I would bring up a topic I haven't heard too much about this year. I was able to go to the Patriots game this Sunday, and I was wondering if the crowd noise at Gillette has been better this year than last year. I thought it was good at the critical points in the game, even though on some of those third downs, the Patriots' defense wasn't.
No, it wasn't good this week.
I thought it was as good awful. As it has been recently against Chicago and right back to normal this week.
I said to Fred during the game, there was like a big third, like, I was like, this is when they need the crowd. They're just sitting there. They're doing nothing. It was terrible this week.
All right. Alejandro.
Because they get bored. Like, if they don't go out and, like, it's like they're like us. They're expecting them to win 45-3.
Right.
And when they don't, they're kind of sitting there. And they don't know what they do. But that's when they need you. When right. they're up 45-3, they don't need you.
It's amazing how it's turned. It went from this city known for drunk, unruly, can't have them on national night game TV fans.
Now they're just drunk and quiet.
Now they just sit there. I'm not even sure they get drunk anymore.
I was going to say, it's not because they're well-behaved, believe like, me. They just don't make any noise.
I just don't get it.
This is Alejandro in Bogota, Tom. He thanks to Tom's enthusiasm, I'm starting to follow more and more closely college football. I have some questions, though, and I hope that I don't get ripped because they're too basic.
Well, if you're asking Tom, you're going to get ripped.
No, so don't rip him. No, He's a college football beginner.
I never rip for basic questions. I rip for stupid comments.
From a historic perspective.
So if you ask, you won't get ripped.
And keep in mind, he's in Bogota, Colombia.
Right.
Okay. So he's not necessarily ingrained in the fabric of American college football.
If you tell me that.
All I hear you say, it doesn't matter either way. Don't even listen. My crap's going to sign my check either way, you bum.
That's when someone makes a stupid comment that John Rook's show is better than ours, and I say he can't hold our job, which I fully believe.
We're up to 40.
One, from historic perspective, which college teams are the most illustrious?
The illustrious? Michigan, Notre Dame, Alabama. Just off the top of my head.
SC.
USC.
USC.
Tufts.
You know, Penn State.
I mean, yeah.
Florida, Florida State, Ohio State.
Notre Dame would be... Notre Dame and Michigan would probably be the top two. They're the top two winningest programs of all time.
Number two, of all the divisions and conferences, which one is the most important?
Most important? Or like the best? SEC usually has the most talent, I would say.
That would be the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah. That's where Florida is in playing for the national title.
Mm-hmm. There's six major conferences within Division One, just to give them a little primer. The ACC
the
is the Atlantic.
Big Ten is always overrated.
The Big Ten, which is the one that has Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa, those teams.
Don't they have 11 teams now?
Yeah.
That's the part I like.
The
especially
SEC,
when you're explaining it to somebody. And it's a Big Ten, but it's got 11 teams.
The SEC is the Southeastern Conference that Tom mentioned with Florida and Arkansas, Tennessee, those kinds of teams, LSU. Then you have the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference. You also have
the Big 12.
The Big 12 with Texas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska. Out west is the Pac-10 with USC and UCLA, Washington, Arizona State.
And the Big East.
And the Big East, which is probably the weakest of the six with West Virginia and budding national power Rutgers.
Mm-hmm. Shiano's staying.
Yep.
Okay. The third question.
Fred on the ropes.
The third question for Alejandro. How does a computer know which team is better? Is it possible to have a playoff-type system in college?
It's possible, but the flaw with the computer is what me and Paul were talking about earlier. The Florida loss to Auburn isn't as bad as it looks because Auburn scored on the final play on a botched lateral, and the Michigan loss to Ohio State isn't as good as it looked because Ohio State had that game well in hand with 10 minutes to go, and Michigan scored late and converted on a two-point conversion. So according to the computer, though, Michigan loses by 3 at Ohio State, Florida loses by 10 at Auburn, boom, there you go. But with your eyes, you know... That's not quite the deal. That's why computers stink.
So I hope that helped you out with a little college football primer, Alejandro. And I think the number one thing that no matter how much interest or level of enthusiasm you have to a college football that you can't get around is it's ridiculous that a computer tells you who the best team is.
And it's so unfortunate because it is so fun to watch, and it would be so fun to watch a playoff system. Anyone. And I know people say, well, if you have four, then you can argue five. I don't care if you argue you're the fifth best team in the country. Who cares?
That's right. I mean, that's exactly what I said. I'd rather have the argument be between number 5 or number 9
right.
being left out.
Or 64, 65, or whatever right. you want. You're always going to have some little
argument. Basketball does it every year.
Right.
There's
right.
major,
teams.
Major controversy every right. year when someone gets left out.
But you know what? No one cares if you argue you're the 64th best.
Right.
Well,
you go to the NIT.
The one thing that might have to change now is they can say, well, one thing we can all be sure of is the 65th team that got left out was not going to win the national title. Well, after George Mason made the Final Four last
yeah.
year. You know, maybe you can make that argument. But anyway, Jeff is in Vegas, and he's next up. It is a good thing that one of the most frustrating games of the season ended up being a win. Another one for you, Andy.
But it is a good thing that it ended up being
a win. I'm just saying that's what everybody's focusing on. That was one of those wins that felt like a loss. I have the Sunday ticket here in Vegas and cannot describe the agony of watching the Pats get dominated by the Lions for much of the game and then switching over and seeing the Jets hammering the Packers in Lambeau. The entire NFL community had its eyes on the Pats game when they were down by 8 in the fourth quarter. All the Pats haters were ready to erupt with glee had the Pats not been able to come back. I can only imagine what things would have been like if the Lions won. Ron Borges' Monday morning article would have been even more of a rip job than it was now. Peter King would be anointing the Jets as having a great chance to win the AFC East. All the talking heads would be agog, I'm not even sure what that means, over the latest unfathomable upset in the NFL. And how the Patriots dynasty was really over and not with and done with for good. Well, I think that's a formality at this point myself. But Patriots fans are most grateful that this did not happen, but that was way too close for comfort. Also, the Ben Watson fumbling thing is really driving me nuts. It's getting to the point where you are afraid that he is going to fumble, and then he goes ahead and does it. Do you think they should tell him to just go down like what they seem to do with Deion Branch and now Caldwell? Is fighting for a few extra yards worth the risk of exposing the ball? Maybe it's time to have Ben start going down after the catch and not risk it.
It's unfortunate, because if you have to do that, then you lose what he's supposed to be, a big, burly, athletic
yeah.
weapon
yeah,
as a tight end. Right. Then, I mean, you've lost it if you've reached that point.
All right. Jamie in Houston, first to call in today. I wish I had something special for you, but I can just add you to the list of the John Rook podcast tote board if you want.
I don't podcast anybody, so...
Good for you.
Sorry, whatever works. If we're lobbying to get him on, you know, put my vote in. If
we're not,
if we're indifferent, then you know, I ain't got a dog in that fight.
Okay.
Well put. What's
hey,
up?
Tom had brought up earlier about running backs and who would be a worse running back than Deshaun Foster as a starting guy, and I'll gladly give you both Sam Congatto and. Ron Dane.
Yeah,
for,
Houston definitely
Deshaun.
Has.
I'll even take Corey Dillon because those guys are terrible.
Houston is
as bad as it gets.
Is without question running back challenged. Too bad they didn't need Reggie Bush.
No, they really didn't. They they really made you know how many.
It's funny, but I watched Tennessee not have to. You know they're in that same division, but yet I guess they thought that Vince Young would be okay to take an offensive player and they could compete and beat the Colts. They didn't need Mario Williams to do
yeah.
that evidently, but. I don't
yeah.
know. Those crazy
now,
Titans.
Now, do you guys have any insight? The way I thought I heard it, too, is, I mean, it took some work for Fisher and those guys to pick Vince. I think they were leaning towards somebody else, though, too, weren't they? Wasn't it kind of a by-chance thing that they ended up taking that
I believe bit? They were split between Young and Leinart.
Leinart and Young, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Reese wanted Leinart. I mean, Reese wanted Young, and Chow and Fisher wanted Leinart.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think they're...
The right
they're appreciating that call.
Well, I think
we'll have to wait and see.
I think
that.
Young is clearly the guy, and I'm not changing my mind based on what he's done. But I think, without question, the day they drafted him, he had the bigger upside. If he put it together, he had more talent than Matt Leinart.
I think he has
the bigger downside.
Definitely
a bigger risk, without doubt.
Yeah, I agree. And something I want to talk about, it seems like it slipped under the radar scope. I really didn't hear it get much email, chatter, and talk from you all, is, why again did we dig up Vinny Testaverde? It scares the hell out of me. They showed him on the sidelines a couple times talking to Brady, and that just scared the hell out of me.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, he's an emergency quarterback. They felt like they were skating by just having two, and they wanted an emergency guy. I wouldn't put any more stock into it than it deserves.
I'll tell you, Parcells has talked a lot about, in recent weeks, about how helpful Testaverde was to Tony Romo. in the days that Testa Verde was with him a couple of years ago and helping in his development. So I think that
do you think he's there for Castle then?
I just think he's an emergency quarterback.
Yeah,
I really do.
I wouldn't try to read too much into it.
Well, yeah, again, I try not to, and I mean, you know, and it's probably a good reason why nobody's, you know, again, I don't want to talk about it a whole lot, but I just didn't, I didn't understand why they called him up mid-year like that. It was just kind of, So, yeah, let's hope we never have to really speak of him again for the rest of the year.
Word.
That's it. Pretty quiet as far as the win goes, an ugly win, but a win's a win, and we just got to eliminate the mistakes, and I think we need to go easier on Ben Watson. Like you said, Andy, he's athletic. I mean, he's a yards after catch guy once he's got to develop that. And, I thought that was, just a good, well-timed hit. I don't, he went to wrap up the ball with both arms. You know, you saw it over the replay a couple times, and I thought he did the best he could. It was just a good play on him.
Yeah, but good, well-timed hits in consecutive weeks on multiple plays, and you say, well, why is he having these problems?
That's three now in 2 weeks.
And the really bad one was the one, the Caldwell play, that ended up fumbling again. Yeah, that was the worst.
That was a brush. I mean, that was like a brush over the
I mean,
arm.
That's disappointing. The guy's big, strong, he's athletic.
Some people would kill to have that body.
Are you guys talking about the 3 weeks where Corey Dillon fumbled, too?
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Since he had such a great game with 28 yards, I just wonder if people
but
forgot
I just,
about those fumbles.
I've sort of given up on Dillon. Watson is supposed to be a building block of this offense for the future, and if you can't count on him with the ball in his hands, he can't be that.
That's a problem.
They need to. There's no way to get around it. They need to protect the ball better than they have.
I think, they all do. They all need to protect it. And,
yes.
He's kind of had his head in the crosshairs now these last few games, but, before we get to cutting and letting anybody go, you better get rid of Gabriel and, these other ass clowns before they even think about
Jamie. Bringing some passion to the show.
Speaking of getting rid of ass clowns, we'll see you, Jamie.
Just kidding. We'll see you, Jamie.
See ya.
Wow, Jamie's all fired up, man.
Well, he started out slow, and then all of a sudden he's throwing ass clowns around.
He's not usually like that either. He's all fired up.
Apparently he's not in the Doug Gabriel fan club.
I mean, he started off with, he was clearly ripping Testa Verde,
right?
You know, it scares him that Brady would be talking to him,
right?
Like some of his negative mojo would be worn off on him or something. All right,
but
let's get
one interesting thing though. I told Andy before we came down. There was all that talk between Bush and Williams for the first pick, and if it ended today, and if Colston remains injured, maybe he doesn't get it. But he would probably win Offensive Rookie of the Year, Bush's teammate, and D'Amico Ryans will probably win Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he's Williams' teammate. I wonder if that's ever happened before.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex is in Munich, Germany, and I read this email only because he's in Munich, Germany. I want to recognize that, but just wants to know, throwing it out there, can they win in Miami the way they played against the Lions?
No.
After the way they, after the game they played against the Lions.
They could win, yeah.
They're going to play the same.
If they play that kind of game in Miami, Miami's too tough down there. They're a much better football
team.
They're
going to need to protect the football.
Yeah.
If they turn it over three plus times, I don't think.
Yeah, if Jason Taylor's getting strip sacks and all that kind of stuff, that's a nightmare for the Patriots.
All right, Bob is next up. Andy, your buddy, Bob Lee, outside the lines. Rod Marinelli's decision to kick a field goal with 13:07 to play in the fourth quarter when holding an 18-13 lead over the Pats.
Weak.
And 2-9 on the year was one of the most bonehead calls I have ever witnessed. Gino Cappelletti mentioned on the broadcast that the Lions were held to 3-and-out only once in the entire game and only punted once. The Lions were marching down the field at will against the beloved Pats, ready to make it a two-possession game. Mike Martz, however maligned he has been in recent past, was masterful. The stars were aligned for the Lions. The Pats shouldn't have won this game, yet Tom Brady goes 14 out of 15 in the fourth quarter and pulls the game out. To give Brady a chance to tie the game with 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter was utter stupidity. What sets Hall of Fame quarterbacks apart? The ability to lift the team to victory when the game stats reveal otherwise. Finally, can you geniuses think of a game where Belichick threw away a game making a bonehead call from the sidelines? I can't. And that's Bob in Regina. Can you guys think of a specific game that a coaching decision? I can't really
I'm sure
think
if we went back to Cleveland,
Buffalo Bills,
I could
season opener.
Few, but
it's more of a GM decision, but
Yeah, I'm talking about strategy, you know, going for it on fourth down.
They never lose. They've only lost a few times in the last few years, so it's hard to – I can't think of any.
I can't really ever think of one. I
nothing
didn't
comes
like,
to mind, and I would assume Paul would remember if it happened. He likes bringing those sort of things up.
That's true. I can't really think of one off the top of my mind. There's a couple of things that they've gotten away with that I thought were bad
right,
things,
but
bad decisions.
That happens.
You know.
I just think this is an example of another coach who sort of shot himself in the foot, wasn't quite ready. And I think what makes it worse, I don't even care about all the facts of the game, whatever. Rod Marinelli's whole theme this year was toughness and turning over the culture in Detroit.
Yeah, we talked
and he had an
that.
Opportunity, and he didn't.
And Andy, I said when I asked him about it at the press conference, he says, well, if it was a little closer, we might have thought about it. A little closer? It was a half a yard.
Right.
What do you mean a little closer?
And if he meant a little closer to the goal line, I would disagree with that, too, because I think that little chain link becomes harder and harder to get the closer to the goal line you get.
I agree. Just a bad call. And then I think it came back even emotionally huge because at some point the Lions started pooping themselves and realizing that they were in a tough game and it just fell apart from there. Well, you have a chance to take that away by going up 12 points.
I looked at it at the end of the third quarter. They were in the midst of that drive that ultimately ended in that field goal. They came off the field. They had just converted the third down. And that was the last play of the third quarter, and they went to the sideline, and Kitna was pumping his fist. The Lions were jumping around. They were excited. They were enthusiastic. They thought they were on the verge of a monumental upset.
Was that the drive with the third and 22?
Yeah.
Yes, that was right. A big play. They had all the momentum on their, you know, on their side.
They had it all going, and I think that you let the air out of your own balloon by not going for that first down. Now, they may have been stopped, but...
I don't care.
The way I look at it is, doesn't
so
make
what,
a difference.
So what, they don't go to the Super Bowl?
Doesn't make a difference to me if it's five
points
or 8 points.
Yeah, I can live
points.
With the Buffalo being stopped in week one.
Right.
They made the right choice. They just didn't execute it.
I look back at it, and I don't look at that and say, oh, if they had just kicked the field goal, they might have won the game. I don't look at it that way at all. I think they did the right thing.
You mentioned Kitna and how excited he was. Has anyone checked on him to make sure that he made it back okay to Detroit? Because, Tom, the quote you had in your opposing view in this PFW.
I've never seen a quarterback that down before in my life.
Take away his laces and his belt.
He literally had tears in his eyes.
Yeah,
like, he was so down on himself.
I wish I could say that, but I've seen a quarterback that I'm quite fond of that despondent after a loss.
You know, according to Roy Williams, they're one hell of a 2-10 football team.
All right, let's see. Josh is next up. He's in Arlington, Virginia. Let's see. If scoring 3 goal line touchdowns on 25 yards makes you an indispensable player, why don't our fellow Patriots fans start a petition to trade for another great running back, Marcell Shipp? I like Dylan, but give me a break. Good work by the Pats to motivate after coming out flat. Sometimes you come out sluggish, and overcoming that is a good sign. Every team has those games during the year. The difference for contenders between losing and winning those games is home field in the playoffs. And
very well put.
That's basically been our mantra all
that's,
day.
That's a great point, though, about the Patriots win these games, the Lions lose them. That's why the Lions are the Lions and the Patriots are the Patriots. But to say what he said, Marcell Shipp scored 3 touchdowns. I don't see anybody in Arizona saying, geez, why did we sign Edgerrin James? I mean, I'm saying that, but...
Well, Shipp made all the plays.
Yeah, Shipp made all the plays.
Let's see. Salt is in Orlando. What do you guys think about Patrick Pass? I really never was a fan and don't want to be mean or crude, but happy he was out most of the season on PUP. I thought maybe this would be the last year he took up a roster spot, but he is back in. What do you think of him and his future with the Pats?
I'm the exact opposite. I was always a big fan of his, and then he grabbed his hamstring, dropped the ball, and he was a disgrace to the organization.
I like Patrick Pass, and it has nothing to do with me doing a running back story this week and needing to talk to him in the locker room.
Or lusting after his physique.
No, that's Watson.
Yeah, he probably likes Pass, too, though.
I'm sorry, I never referred to Watson as buff in one of my articles.
According to Paul, it was a racist statement I made.
Not that part of it wasn't.
Oh, just my general.
Your generalization.
Overall.
Well, you know, we're getting sick and tired of working with Kramer Jr. over here.
All right, let's see. What was this? Jenkinson, next up. Not sure if we remember any emails from Jenkinson.
I don't even know who Salt is. I feel like there's a whole new line of emailers here.
What's wrong with Maroney / Dylan? First, Maroney hasn't broken a 15-yard run in like 2 games, and Chad... And Chad ain't doing much but dropping balls. Is it Brady not giving him the ball enough or him not earning Brady's trust? How long do you think it will be until Rodney comes back? So I guess the last part of that.
Well, Chad has to be on the field to earn trust. He doesn't play.
This is true.
And catching bombs that are thrown his way might go a long way towards getting more passes thrown his way.
All right, now we're getting into some better emails here. Jason.
Wow, shots at the previous ones.
I think there is a middle ground. This is talking about negative Dylan Casale.
I knew it was a shot on one of us when
well,
he
I don't
said
know
the
what
better
it's,
emails.
I don't know what it says. I just read the subject line. I think there is a middle ground. Sure, it's fine and okay to discuss the problems with the team, although I also think it is a few steps toward being naysayers and totally negative. What I will say is that they did win the game, and bottom line, that is what counts. A win with style points the same. A win with style points is the same. What I think is important to note is that the 0-3 team won very few ugly games. Won a few very ugly games, and that is why to go negative on this team is hardly with real perspective. Or maybe people forget about the season altogether and how the team won many close games.
Hey, let's talk about 2001 for a while, Paul. That was 5 years ago.
I just want to say that at 9-3 and not playing their best, I am not worried. Sure, there are things that must improve. They must improve on if they are to get to Miami in February, but have some perspective on things. As for Dylan and the negatives on him, I totally disagree with those that want only Maroney in the backfield. You know what? I want the Patriots to win as much as I like Corey starting and softening up the D. And having Maroney in for some of that.
Softening up other than his big fat gut.
I think that combo works well. As for Casale, I don't even know what this is supposed to say. Muzzled and off the show? I don't know.
I'm not going anywhere.
Check's coming either way, punk.
I'd rather he stay so those that think he is wrong a lot of the time can see whether he is or not. And that's Jason.
Huh?
Not really sure that was
so,
in English.
So he said there's problems with the team. So when we discuss them openly here, that's being negative. So he contradicted himself, first of all. Second of all, are you...
No, he said we're steps from being negative naysayers.
So you're not worried about all those free receivers running across the middle? That doesn't worry you at all? See, we're not fans. We can't just be fans. We can't just say, well, they're 9-3, Teddy Bruschi's great, they're going to the Super Bowl. Because that wouldn't make for a very, very entertaining show, wouldn't make for a very informative show. So when we see things like that, I mean... Andy, did you see things on Sunday that bothered you? Because I saw some things that bothered me, and I think it's our job to bring it to the forefront instead of just saying, hey, they got Brady and Belichick. I only do that when I write stories.
Well, I think we saw that. A good offensive coordinator and a veteran quarterback found Chad Scott, Ellis Hobbs, and Teddy Bruschi at times with 5 yards between the receiver and the defender. And I mean, that has to be worrisome because, oh, wait, we might actually face some good coaches and good quarterbacks in the playoffs.
What worried me the most is I think Roy Williams is excellent, but the number two and number three guys were a safety and a backup quarterback. That worries me the most. Anyway, Pat is in Ireland, and he hits the nail right in the head, Tom. Love the show. I also like John Rook's show, so you can add me to the podcast list.
Nah.
However, I think I have a better idea. I think John Rook should join the PFW in Progress team. And to make room, you could get rid of Andy, because let's be honest, he brings nothing to the show. Maybe Andy could be the
Suck
Hank Poteet of PFW, only used when you really, really
Why don't you have another drink, you lush?
Actually, he says when you're really, really stuck.
See, now there's an
Go
intelligent
to the bar,
emailer.
You bum.
Right. There's someone who sat down, wrote an intelligent email, thoughtful email.
Go eat some potatoes and have a drink.
Keeping up his Kramer reputation.
No, he's not racist.
Kiss the Blarney Stone in my ass, you bum.
Jason from Oklahoma.
You know what's funny, though? Like, that guy, he'll really hate you now.
Right.
Because you're joking around. I love those emailers. Like, they think like we know them and that we're being really serious. And now that guy will hate Andy for the rest of his life.
He should.
Yeah, I guess my point was kind of moot there.
Jason in Oklahoma, I think that Patriots Playbook should be on podcast. I really enjoy listening to your show and his when I get to catch them. I think that a lot of your podcast listeners have never heard the Patriots Playbook show and might vote if they knew what they were listening to. Maybe if you do one show so that the podcast listeners know what they are voting for, you might get more response. That's Jason in Oklahoma.
That's a Fred question.
Let's see. Eric is in Boise, Idaho, wearing a pink carnation. Great show. Listen every day. This question is for Tom.
Was he on the blue turf?
I was hoping to hear what he thinks about the BSU Oklahoma and Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl.
I don't know if you want to know.
Yeah, I don't think you want to know either.
Well, I had an argument with that fat reporter that I don't like, who thinks that Boise State should play for the national title because they won all their games.
Who's the fat reporter you don't like?
You know, you know who he's talking
about. You know,
about.
The Prenny. You know.
That DB.
Now, I think even this Boise State fan will tell you that the way the system is right now, that's just not possible. Boise State can't play. I think they got a bad draw. Oklahoma's hot right now. Their
playing
defense is playing
unbelievably well.
I think that quarterback, Paul Thompson, has really come on at the end of the year, and I think that's a bad matchup for Boise State. I think they'll stay in it for a while with their offense, but just too much Oklahoma in that game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I like Boise State because I like different teams getting mm-hmm. opportunities to play. I think that they rightly were selected for a BCS game.
Right.
But I think ultimately they're going to fall short.
I think
they
should be in there over Notre Dame. Like, if it was between those two, Boise State should definitely go.
Ken is in Waltham, Mass. Any theories as to why the Pats are playing so much better on the road this year? Can it really just be a coincidence? Just wondering. Maybe they shouldn't even be trying to get a bye. I think for the most part it's a difference in schedule, although that's not the case
this week. According to the players, they weren't up for the game. I mean, they said it after the game. They weren't really... You know,
right.
To me,
I think that's understand. I mean, I know fans aren't used to seeing Patriots fall into traps or whatever, but they had a tough game against the Bears.
Very physical game.
Physical game, big game, important game, a playoff team. Bill has a tough week of practice, and I'm sure somewhere in the back of their minds, because they're human beings, they're saying, phew, can't wait to get to Sunday and play the Lions.
Right.
I mean, that is, you know,
and
just
they
kind
actually of have fallen into some of them in the past, too. I mean, they had a game back in 03 against Houston that they played, a very similar game that they played this past week. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was either right before or right after the Colts game that was coming up. Remember the big goal line stand game in Indy? I think it was the week before. So it happens. I mean, they were coming, in this case, they were coming off a big emotional win. In that case, I think they were preparing for a big emotional game, and sometimes you get caught.
And I think the one thing to take away from this game is what we've been saying. I don't count the Bengals because Carson Palmer was not right. You can make say anything you want. Carson Palmer was not Carson Palmer when they played him. But the Colts threw all over this team. You know, I'm watching these subpar teams throw the ball all over them. Now, if you're worried about something going into the playoffs, that's what I would be worried about. Because no one's going to just line up and run the ball on the Patriots over and over,
I don't think.
Right. It's the teams that can throw it. Those are the ones that they're going to have trouble with.
Let's see. Cliff is in Sanford, Maine. What's the chances of the Pats signing to an extension in the Ty Warren. Pats signing Ty Warren to an extension in the offseason. Seeing as he has 1 year left on his current deal after this season, I would like to see him locked up to a longer deal before he can even get the chance to hit the free agent market.
Hopefully that's not true. Otherwise, Ask PFW is wrong. Because I thought his deal ran through 2008. Right? And you have 7 and 8.
I believe you're right. I think he signed a six-year deal, six-year rookie deal.
I'm pretty sure he did.
So that would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know why he would want to sign an extension.
Pretty sure
now.
Graham was the only one out of that group that got a five-year deal, right?
Could be.
Pretty sure. I'm talking about the first round picks. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure he signed through 2008 because I looked it up. Somebody asked about the whole defensive line as a whole and re-signing them and what. They're all under contract. You don't really have to worry about it right now. They all are through either 2008 or 2009, except for Mike Wright, who has another 2 years
before
under doing anything. So you don't really have to worry about it. I know we say they should sign, but you're not even into the point, you know, maybe before the 2008 season, you want to get something done with Ty Warren so he doesn't go into that season. But you can wait and play out the rest of this year and next year if you want to. And at that point, based on what we've seen, Ty Warren with a serious upswing and Richard Seymour maybe leveling out here, maybe you have to make a decision. Do I re-sign Seymour or do I re-sign Warren? Because the year after that, Seymour's deal ends. He's through 2009 on the extension. So you have some time to play here, and I don't think you need to rush into anything.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that's a very good situation they have going forward with
right,
these guys. They're all locked up for at least a couple more years.
It's basically what happens if you hit on your first-round picks. You have them wrapped up for like 6 years, so you can see them develop into what they are.
A couple more here before we sign it off and turn it over to John Rook for Patriots Playbook. Patrick is next. Great show so far. Keep up the good work. I made the four-hour ride for the game this weekend. The new field looks great. I just wish our team was like the field. But after Sunday's performance, they looked more like the old worn-out sod. I personally counted six separate occasions where the pads were less than a half a footstep away from too many players on the field. I noted at least three of those occasions Wilfork would have been the culprit. What scared me more than the players' apathy Sunday was that not once did I see anyone on the coaching staff get in the players' face about their lethargy. I look forward to your take on this matter. I think we just kind of talked about that, Tom and Andy. Man, I think it's hard to kind of maintain that peak intensity level every week, and I do think the Chicago game was a big game.
Yeah,
but in specific, I mean, I didn't really notice these one step away from 12 men on the field.
I think that happens every week.
I think it happens every week. And if coaches aren't chewing a guy out for it, my assumption is a team like Detroit that does a lot of formations, a lot of different things, they probably weren't sure exactly what they were doing. It was a late change, and they're just happy the guy got off the field because they're changing their person. If Wilfork's coming off, they're going nickel or some sort of sub package. So I'm guessing it was just the nature of the game, and you're happy as long as you don't get the penalty.
All right, we'll wrap it up here with Taylor. I have been a fan for a bit, and
hate Andy.
I have been a fan for a bit.
It's got to be one of us.
And such a Patriots rooter. However, this last game against the Lions was just shameful.
Oh, the team they hate now.
I predicted the Pats would have established their high score in the first half, making the Lions having to catch up during the second half. In that, I felt that after establishing a decent lead, Belichick would take Brady out and put either Castle or Testaverde in for field time for them and a break for Brady. How disappointed
was I?
How disappointed I was to watch the Pats.
It's like Jim Rome.
It's too late. I would do a Jim Rome, but it's too late. It would take too long. To watch the Pats manifest 10 penalties, a season high for our beloved Pats, and the turnovers. Don't even get me started. But I think I either underestimated the Lions or overestimated the Patriots. But then again, it was a weekend of upset, and perhaps I'm grateful we won nonetheless. I'm very proud of our team and look forward to the nail-biting game against the Dolphins, being that they beat Indianapolis. They didn't beat Indianapolis. The Titans beat Indianapolis.
They beat the Bears.
We'll see. I miss say I'll go Pats. That's Taylor in California. So at least there were a couple that seemed to be dissatisfied with the way they played and not just willing to blow it off as nothing.
Yeah, and like we said, it was one of those things where they just weren't there mentally early on, but they came back, they won, because that's why they have Brady and they're the Patriots, and the Lions have John Kitna and they're the Lions.
Not there mentally. It's just kind of like Andy Hart and his appearances on PFW in Progress.
Yep.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you talking about? I'm here.
Well, I said mentally.
I'm never anywhere mentally.
It's a good point. Well, it's a good way to wrap it here. We will be back tomorrow for PFW in Progress. And until then, John Rook will take you to the next 2 hours on Patriots Playbook. Patriots Playbook.